This episode of The Rick Emerson Show is made possible by our good friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
It's one f***ing time I take you home, okay?
Uh-huh.
Not your f***ing dada.
Uh-huh.
It's not like you helped me back there with that nut job or anything, you know?
Uh-huh.
The right height, you're right there to grab his balls. You can twist them.
Why do you need a car?
What are you talking about?
This car.
Which turn is it?
State Sheriff's. Where's your sleigh?
It's in the shop, getting repaired.
Where are the reindeer?
I stabled them. Is it left or right?
That way. Where's the stable?
Next to the shop.
How do they sleep?
Are the reindeer standing up?
But the noise, how do they sleep?
What noise?
From the shop.
They only work during the day, all right?
I thought it was always night at the North Pole.
Well, not now. Right now, it's always day.
Then how do they sleep?
Oh, shit, Sage Terrace. What is it with you, anyway? Somebody drop you on your fucking head?
On my head?
Well, yeah, what, are they going to drop you on somebody else's head?
How can they drop me onto my own head?
No, not onto your... what? God damn it! Are you f***ing with me?
It is 22 minutes after the hour of 1, and this the month of December in the year of our Lord 2010. Thank you for coming along and making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network. This, my friends, is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It is Tuesday, December 21st, 2010. And welcome to Day 12. Thank you for coming by. That ye might learn and be amused. It's 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. If you would like to engage with us telephonically today with your comments, questions, clarifications, observations, ruminations, ponderings, musings of an ironic nature, whatever it is you might have to grace our ears and those ears belonging to your fellow citizens of planet Earth. It's 503-505-6964. Ooh, Yanni. So somebody just sent me... I'm looking at this link here. I haven't clicked on it yet. It just says, here's some video of last night's Spider-Man fail.
Oh.
See? I knew that would perk you right up. That's fantastic. Not that you needed perking, but I'm just saying a good day can always be made better by video of the guy falling off the... just came clean out of the harness, did he? Is it that the harness just broke, or did it come unsnapped? Do we know?
I think it came unsnapped.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. I mean, not for him, but for everybody else. Really, here's the thing about the... I don't want to get sidetracked by this, but I will make this one observation because we were talking about it last hour during Legion of News, a fine radio program which airs at Cascadia.fm every weekday from noon until 1, and which you can also hear at legionofnews.com. So we're talking about this. Is it on Broadway, off Broadway?
It's going to be on Broadway. They're still actually in the preview screenings. So preview screenings, preview performances.
This is sort of like
they're trying to work the kinks out.
This is just one or two tweaks left. Just a little bit of polishing at this point. Really, it's just a game of inches. This is like when a guy gets up in front of you to like a screening of a movie, and he goes, "Right now, what you're going to see is a temp score, and there's no completed credits." And some of the effects are a little, they're a little unpolished right now. Except this guy right now you're going to see Spider-Man falling and landing on the stage and shattering his vertebra. Also, by the way, there's going to be several small fires started in the audience at some point during the performance. That's awesome. So, but I mean, there's 6 billion people on planet Earth. I would say probably everybody, I would say of the 6 billion people, I would say there's maybe 100 who are negatively impacted by this. Yeah. That is a thing that is good and entertaining for 99.99999% of humanity. Yes. And you can't say that about, like, anything.
No. It is sad for, like, that one guy and, like, his family. And I suppose the people who are working on the show, because it's like, you know, it could impact their paychecks.
And anybody who's invested money in the show.
Yeah, but everybody else in the world, it's like, brah!
That's right.
Spider-Man fail.
Yes, and Seamus has followed up by saying, Spider-Man, they've had so many problems, they must be at the end of their rope. And then he actually types, ha, after that. So there you go. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's Tuesday. Thank you for coming by. It's 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. Speaking of coming by, later on today, our good friend Kristen Bowie is going to pay a visit to the studio. I think it's going to be, it is the first time she's going to be here since I think we launched this, since we launched this version of the show. And I know that because she called into the show on Thanksgiving and then not too passively snarked at me for not inviting her by sooner. Yeah. So there you go, sister. So she's coming in today.
I generally see her for about a minute and a half on Wednesdays because Hamfisted Radio is on right before Don't Panic Portland over at Cascadia. So she'll come in like just as I'm like leaving.
Now, does she do a show? Now, is it like once a day, once a week,
I think they're every day or they're a couple of days a week. I'm not sure.
I guess we can
They may
her.
Be every day now. They were only 2 days a week for a but they might be every day now. I don't know.
The demand was such that they had no choice.
Well, yes.
So our good friend Kristen Bowie, who many of you remember from previous incarnations of this program, as well as a show called Musicology that aired on AM 970 back when. So she will be here today around 2 o'clock. I had originally contacted her to... What are you doing over there? You're jamming your finger into the opening of the Coke Zero can. You're going to cut yourself.
Well, once again,
Did you drop something inside?
No, the little I don't know.
The little flappy tab thing
was not. It had not gone in all of the way, so I could see it, and it was bothering you.
You're basically just a raccoon over there. There's just a bright shiny thing inside a dark hole, and so you just jam your hand into it.
Well, you pull the tab, and it jams the little flappy part down in, and it's away, and you can't see it, and that way, you know, it does not impede the liquid coming out of the can of Coke Zero into my mouth. And for one thing, I have this slight fear that it will somehow create like a weirdness in the flow, so it'll like slurp onto my face. And also, I just don't like looking at it, and it was distracting me, and I was thinking about it, so I just stuck my finger in there and got it out of the way.
You know, here's the thing, is that some days you're the nurse and I'm the Indian. Some days I'm the Indian and you're McMurphy. Some days we're both Harding, and then some days I can't tell who is who. All right. Well, in any event, I don't even know which part of that to address first or none of them. I'm going to go with none of them, except to say, never mind. F it. All right. So there you go. I just looked over and you've got this can of Coke Zero, stylish black and red can with the Tron logo on the side. And you were just jamming your finger into the hole, which seems like a good way to cut the hell out of your finger. And B, reminds me of an amusing Peter Carlin soundbite that I'll have to play later, where he actually was doing that same thing while he was on the show with us. And it resulted in a hilarious piece of audio that we'll play in just a bit.
All right.
Today's Rick Emerson Radio program brought to you by our good friends at Sorrell's Vintages, 3713 Southeast Hawthorne. 3713 Southeast Hawthorne. So the weather outside, not frightful, cold, I would say. Maybe not bad as such. It all depends. It's all relative. It depends on your point of view. But I would say it's certainly frigid. It chills the bones. So a good place to be is inside Sorrell's Vintages, where you can be giving them your hard-earned money. And in exchange, they're going to give you a series of fine items that you can then give to your loved ones for Christmas. And then in exchange for that, you'll then get you'll get like a dibs or a credit, or they'll owe you basically. You'll give them something great for Christmas, and then they are required to give you something great for Christmas. And if they don't, like if you get them something from Sorrell's, first of all, it's going to be great. And then if they get you something great, then it's the wash. If they don't, you've got guilt to lord over them for the next, I don't know, 364 days or until your birthday or your whatever. So I'm just saying, you go there, you get something, you give it to the person in your life. If you want, you could go two different ways here. You go to Sorrell's, you get something great, you give it to somebody who always gives you something good, and that way you can feel like at long last you are worthy of the fine presents they give. Or You give it to somebody who typically just blows it on the gift front, and this way you've got even more emotional leverage over them if you ever need them to give you like a kidney or something.
When I learned this a long time ago living in the LA area, that there were like places you could go, usually on Melrose, where there were these great stores that sold like just really super cool, super hip, really odd little things, and I would buy things for people for gifts there, and you get like the double like pleasure out of it, where you know they the person is like happy that you gave them something interesting and unique, and also they go, oh god, this is great, you give the coolest presents, so you get like the little ego boost of like, yes I do,
I'm a stylish person,
I am awesome at giving presents. And the thing about like Sorel's, as we saw with the things that Anton brought in, Sorel's is exactly one of those kinds of stores where you buy these super super cool things that not only somebody goes, wow, you must think I'm really cool to give me this cool thing, but they also think you are really cool that you give such cool presents,
and they want, and they think you have access to some secret store somewhere that they're that they've never seen.
Yes,
because the thing, it's not like it's hard to find. It's right there in Hawthorne, but it's like you go in there and it's just it does. It's like a, this doesn't sound like a compliment, but it is. It's like that. It's like I always say that it looks more expensive than it is, or that it's not as expensive as it looks. And also, it looks like stuff that is from a much like more. It doesn't look like a place you could just find in Hawthorne. I mean, it looks like a place you'd have to really, really search for. So, do yourself a favor. It is now the 21st, so that the time is now. Really, I mean, it's at hand. Man, woman, black, white, gay, straight, Jew, or Gentile, you gotta buy stuff. So, I mean, there's just no getting around that fact. It's the 21st, so go there. 3713 Southeast Hawthorne. That is 3713 Southeast Hawthorne. The Rick Emerson Radio program today features Cannibal Watch. So we got your Cannibal Watch coming up today. I don't even know what the cannibal is. It from Germany?
No.
Okay. Cannibal Watch coming up. Also, Joy of Christmas. There's a whole bunch of stories. I only pulled like three or four, and you probably found some of your own. So we've got the Joy of Christmas coming up today. Let's see what else. Did I mention Kristen Bowie? Yes, Kristen Bowie will be here around 2 o'clock. I had originally scheduled her for this week, just not knowing if Patrick, I don't know if his head was going to fall off or something, and he was going to be stuck in the hospital. So I was sort of, Cheryl and I were, it was largely Cheryl. I just sort of went, uh-huh, yeah, and just said yes. You know, she did all the actual work, of course, and then I took credit.
Cheryl said, you know, if Don's not here, you might need somebody to, like, do some stuff.
Really? I mean, yeah, pretty much I just sort of sit around and wait for other people to come up with good ideas or to execute, to execute plans. And then I just sort of go, that's great, well done. And then I move forward. So she was the one who suggested, she's like, well, you got to talk to Kristen Bowie. So I had sort of slotted her in to come in at some point this week, but she's going to come in today because, A, we haven't had her on. B, I don't want to get too ahead of myself here, but because she doesn't play World of Warcraft anymore, I don't think.
No, but she has some very strong opinions about why she doesn't.
Okay, so there's several things. One, I wanted to talk to her about what she's been up to since we left CBS, because I honestly don't remember this at all. I guess I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. I don't remember. God, I'm old and my brain doesn't work. I don't remember when she left CBS as opposed to me. But I guess we'll figure it out. I'll ask her.
I think she left about the same time because she ended up going. She ended up leaving broadcast, but going over and working in the office end of like
maybe
slotting ads in on Kink and stuff like that.
Well, we'll figure it out.
Yeah, so she'll tell us.
But I want to ask her about that. I also want to ask her about this: why she quit playing World of Warcraft, which maybe nobody else cares about. And it's not like I care about it all that much, but I don't really see her that often. And I know that there was a time where she was a really hardcore WoW player, and now she's not. So I want to know what that's all about, the reason that I'm going to bring that up today. There was something that I mentioned at the beginning of yesterday's show. I said, well, I got this long list of things that I did last night, but I don't know how interesting any of them are. And one of them I put off because I wanted to bring it up when Kristen was here. And it just has to do with that game Settlers of Catan. Uh-huh. And I know that you play Settlers of Catan, which is a board game. However, there's also an Xbox version of it. You can play Settlers of Catan on Xbox, which is how my wife plays it. And I don't know that this is true. I might have to call my wife later and have her clarify this. But I am almost certain. Now, I can't swear to this. But my wife, who is 30 years of age, my wife is an adult. Let's put it that way. My wife is a grown woman. Do you realize that my wife literally, not figuratively, literally has like the life and death status of other human beings like in her hands during the day? Not every day, but sometimes. Yeah. She's a nurse. She deals with people who are sometimes in a bad way.
Well, she does literally have their life in her hands. I mean, if she just decided to kill somebody, she could. She has the tools.
She's not alone in that, Don. But she's a nurse, and so she, you know, she has folks who are sort of living in a precarious state occasionally, and they trust her with, and rightfully so, but they trust her with all kinds of hardcore responsibility. So she's not. This is all by way of saying that she really is a delightfully mature and responsible and wonderful person in all of the best ways, and she's the apple orchard of my eye and so forth. But I am almost certain that she, A, was playing Settlers of Catan online the other night and got into, like, a shouting match with somebody. And I am further certain that the shouting match, which, by the way, had nothing to do with... I don't think it was, like, a personal thing. Like, I don't think it was, anybody was insulting her. She was... I think it had to do with the game. And I think the feud about... I don't know, they were, like, fighting over sheep. Is that a thing people do?
Yeah, you trade resources. You trade...
Is it possible that she would have been trading sheep for somebody's wood?
Yes.
Okay.
And that is it never ceases to be funny when you're playing Settlers of Catan when somebody says, "I got wood for sheep."
Yeah.
So always funny.
I think she may have been trading something for something else, and I think it may have escalated into this war of words over the headset. And here's the thing: I believe, although I cannot swear, that once the game was done, that she actually moved the feud to email and has been emailing back and forth angrily with, like, some, like, 9-year-old, like, in Nantucket about something that happened during Settlers of Catan. And I don't know that that's true, so we might actually have to call her later and have her...
I'll say, I play Settlers of Catan online.
Uh-huh.
I don't have the Xbox, so I don't do that. But I will go onto the online site, and I will play online. And there is absolutely no way I would want to be talking over headset to most of these jack-offs that you end up playing against. It's enough that I sit there and I end up just shouting at my computer. You know, I'm just like, oh, come on!
There's probably a way to turn off the sound. In other words, to turn off the chatter from the other, players. I just have never bothered to look for it because I typically, I don't play a lot of online multiplayer stuff. I signed on to Xbox for the first time in a long time, onto Xbox Live for the first time in a long time a couple nights ago, to the point that Seamus actually sent me an instant message. Somebody was like, oh my God, is that Rick Emerson? The Rick Emerson? Is that television's Rick Emerson on Xbox Live? Because I just haven't been playing a lot of Xbox. I've just been busy with a bunch of stuff. And then when I have been playing, I've been playing just the campaign against the computer. And, Left 4 Dead, which is still my game of choice right now, but Left 4 Dead, one of the great things about that is you can't be a jackass during Left 4 Dead. I mean, it is almost by definition impossible to be a dick while playing that game, because if you're a jerk, you get hosed, like, right out of the gate. That is a game that requires, it requires a team effort. You have to all throw your lot in together, or you're just going to get killed. You can't just go off on your own and just be a dick, or it's going to come back on you.
Yeah, with Settlers of Catan, the last time I actually got into it was somebody, he was just an ass in every possible way. And he kept typing things in that, he was an ass. And so then finally he got all mad. He wanted to know why the other guy and I were trading with each other and not trading with him. And I typed in something that's like, well, perhaps it has something to do with your attitude.
If you were such a jag-off.
Yeah. So, and then the guy was like, F you! Here's my attitude! I mean, you're playing a game!
So I was walking through the living room and I just heard the low chatter of the... Because there's the sound of the game playing. And then I just heard this low rumble in the background indicating that some of the other players had headsets on. And then I came in later and she had her headset on, which she never does. And there was sort of raised tones and brusque syllables being thrown back and forth. And then later I just saw her like really jabbing angrily at her phone and just saying like, well, and just muttering to herself like, well, F you, it's a stupid jerk. And then hitting send, which is like, I don't know. I can only assume that whoever she was fighting with, and again, my wife is... She is in her 30s.
And she's a very nice woman.
And a very normal, balanced, nice woman. And then also, it's a game where you're trading, as you said, wood for sheep.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask her about that, but we'll wait until Kristen is here. Around 2:30 or so, listener Sean is going to be in the studio, and he'll be bringing with him the top five modern Christmas songs. That is top five Christmas songs post-1970. So we'll get that as well. Don Taylor is also tracking the following headlines for you on this Tuesday.
A face transplant patient meets her donor's family.
Oh, that's weird.
There's a Christmas miracle in Provo, Utah. And the Smurfs Village game has added an important warning about buying Smurf berries.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. What did you do last night, Dawn?
I made Christmas cookies, Rick Emerson.
These Christmas cookies?
Those are some of them.
Awesome.
I also made fudge. But, I decided, I'm way behind on everything because of the Patrick thing. And I was like, no, damn it, I'm going to make the Christmas cookies. And then just kind of realized, wow, I'm way over my head in this. What was I thinking? But ended up doing stuff last night, and including, and I mentioned this before the show, and you just kind of looked at me like I could see your eyes glazing over before you even mentioned it. But I'm making chocolate chip cookies, and I've decided to, as a test, to try these chocolate chip cookies that that the New York Times says is like this optimal.
The definitive chocolate chip cookie.
Yeah. 2 years ago, the New York Times did like, it was like a 4-page story. It was like a huge story. You can find it online, and it's like 4 web pages where they had spoken to some of the best bakers in New York, who were especially guys who were known for really excellent chocolate chip cookies, including like Jacques Therese and some other people, and asked them, you know, about their techniques for chocolate chip cookies.
Hold on a second. Let me just... All right, go ahead.
And one thing they found was common among all of these different bakers was that they make the chocolate chip cookie dough and they let it rest for between like 24 and 36 hours, up to 72 hours. Someone who is like a writer about food science said this is like really a canny move because it allows the flour an opportunity to absorb all the moisture. In chocolate chip cookies, pretty much the only moisture in the dough is from eggs, and they're really gelatinous. And then your flour is coated in butter, and so it makes it hard for it to absorb the moisture. But if you leave it in the thing... So they did these tests where they actually made this recipe, and then they made exactly the same amount of cookie from the same recipe at, like, immediately, and then at 24 hours and at 36 hours. And they did find that the texture of the cookie improved, and even the flavors deepened and became more sort of brown sugary and toffee-like as the dough rested. So, and it's also some kind of, they got some weird thing going on where it's instead of AP flour, it's a combination of bread flour and cake flour. So I said, you know, I'm going to give this a shot. So I made chocolate chip cookie dough day before yesterday. And it's been in the fridge resting, and tonight I will be scooping it out and making these, and I will see if these are somehow more magically delicious than normal chocolate chip cookies.
No offense. Now I know what it's like to sit and listen to me talk about the different kinds of headphones and how Sony has a brand new version of the MDR V6s out that has a slightly different frequency response. And how the cup style of the headphones is such that it ensconces the ear in a slightly different way so that you get more low bass resonance.
Yeah. Yeah. My husband was kind of feeling the same way last night when I was talking to him and just going, and I don't really understand what this thing is where they want you to use cake flour and bread flour because cake flour has less gluten and bread flour has more gluten. So by just doing half and half, why would that somehow be different than just using AP flour, which ostensibly would have a gluten level, which is somewhere in the middle? And Patrick's just looking at me like going, I don't care. I just want to eat cookies.
I'm seeing dead relatives. I should note a couple of things. One is that, so you brought a bag of cookies here that I'll be trying later on. Also that Cheryl brought some cookies to the Outlook Portland taping yesterday, which I then brought here and I put in the kitchen. I think there's a few of those left, and they're fantastic,
oh,
by the way.
I need to get them.
There's just massive amounts of butter in them, which is that really is the key to a great cookie right there.
And as these that I brought in, there's a massive amount of butter in these as well. They're jam thumbprint cookies, which are basically a buttery shortbread, and then they're dipped and coated in coconut.
Moving from the subtle to the trashy, let me ask you this. I have a question about those. One of those cookies, it's like they're the pink and white frosted animal cookies.
I love those, yeah.
Okay, what is the deal with those? Where, you know what I'm talking about, right?
It's
when they have sprinkles.
Animals.
Yeah, but they've got sprinkles on them and stuff,
right.
Like from Mothers or whatever.
Yeah.
What is the deal with the icing on those where it's like you have 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, they're great, and then like on the 11th cookie, they just become awful. There's just like a rancid thing that happens.
I think it's because for one thing, it's got a whole bunch of chemical stuff in it and stabilizers, but also I think that there's a high level of like shortening in it. It's not, you know, it's obviously not made with just like butter and stuff, but to get that coating that's on those cookies, It's really good because it's not really hard, but it's not really soft like a frosting. So I think it has to be made with like some kind of, you know, a shortening or a vegetable oil. And yeah, that's that thing where if you eat too much of it, you start feeling like it's
taste?
Coating. Yeah, it's coating your tongue.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what it is. It's like your tongue is wearing just some sort of like horrible oily glove.
Yeah.
It's just awful. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Before we move on, let me just remind everybody, coming up Friday is our Christmas Eve special. Mr. Big Jim Willig will be here. We'll also have holiday greetings and surprises from various other folks. Plus, we'll be playing back our annual broadcast of Behind the Christmas, plus an encore of our live radio play from a couple years back, Ebenezer, I Barely Knew Her, and Tim Riley's Frank Sinatra at Christmas. I got to put up a Twitter post about that. That is Tim Riley's Frank Sinatra Christmas is going to be aired this Friday. And I made just one note about this last hour during Legion of News, and I want to mention it here so I can get it done and out of the way. I wrote down the word Twitter to myself because you were talking about Facebook having some new instant messaging service or some new chat service or whatever. And I know I just sound like an old guy here when I talk about this stuff, because this is like when David Walker and I were trying to figure out Twitter. I just, like 80% of the Facebook and Twitter functions that exist are just a mystery to me. They are unknown to me or unknowable by me. So what is the new Facebook thing? Because they already had the chat service. They already had like little chat boxes that popped up.
And they had an
emailing service already.
So I don't know what the new thing is. I really don't.
Is it a thing that goes to your phone, or is it?
I don't know. I haven't really paid any attention to it. I suppose I could, like, you know, while we're doing the show, or I could pull this up on Facebook and
I guess it doesn't matter all that much, I guess. But the other thing is this: this is like when you go to the Twitter page. And it says, have you gotten that message at the top of Twitter where it says, like, we're going to be switching to an all-new version of Twitter? This version of Twitter that has served everybody flawlessly for the last 5 years will be going away. It'll be replaced by something large and cumbersome that does more than you want.
Yeah.
Which is the thing that Yahoo Mail did. And I still use, you know, Yahoo Mail every now and again for stuff because it hosts some of my domains and whatever. But it's like Yahoo Mail, I do not understand this compulsion that companies have to take a product that works really, really well and then just begin adding crap to it. Making it bulkier and more bloated until it does all kinds of things you don't want, and it has ceased doing the thing that it was really good at.
Yeah, so far, Google has been really good about not screwing up either Google or Google Mail too much. Although I'm still not a fan of this whole what's happening with the pull down and the suggestions, and then the field where you put in your search thing disappearing once you've made a search, so you can't alter it without, like, you know, going back. I don't like that.
The thing Google has done is they've screwed with their image search, which I don't really care for. It used to just be that it would show you the image and then it would show you the location of the image, and now there's a thing you have to hover over it.
And it's all broken up into pages for some reason, and I don't know why.
Not a fan. Well, all right. Well, in any event. It is 503-505-6964. Oh, I was going to ask you, Sons of Anarchy.
Yes.
So you are done with season two.
I am done with season two. I'm about to start episode 5 of season 3.
Wow, so you're like 2/3 of the way through season 3 already.
I am powering through it. Yes, I just, yesterday I saw the episode where Stephen King shows up as the cleaner.
How great is that? And how creepy is he? I mean, that is just a thing where it's like they answer the door and it's there Stephen King. And
he just walks in without a word and just measures her and starts doing his job.
And it's like, and I knew he was going to be doing a cameo this season. I read somewhere that Stephen King looked, and it's like you look and you know it's Stephen King. I mean, he's such a famous author that, you know, everybody recognizes him on site.
And you had mentioned this was going to happen too, and I'd completely forgotten about it. And they mentioned they were calling the cleaner, and something in my brain kind of went, well, I know something about that. What do I know? Forget it. And I just let it go. And then ding dong, and they open the door, and I was like, oh, that's right, it's Stephen King. Ah!
But here's the thing about it. Did you notice this, that when you were when they open the door and there's Stephen King, you have the two levels of, like, on the one hand, you go, well, like, hey, that's Stephen King. But then you also have no problem accepting him as this character.
And he's, because he's so creepy looking.
Yeah, because he's
And he's all dressed in like a black leather jacket, and he just looks really dour and
he's
creepy.
All tall and hunched over. Yeah. The best moment of that entire episode is at the end when they say, well, where's the rest of the body? And he says, what body? And then he, like, takes the bowling trophy or whatever, like, as payment, and then walks out.
Yeah.
So, awesome. So you have not yet gotten to, and this isn't, like, a spoiler.
No.
But there's a, I'll say this. In season 3 of Sons of Anarchy, there is a, they make a small change to the production style of the show.
They are about to go to Belfast, I think. They just ended this episode, the episode I just watched, which was episode 4, I think, was it ends with Jack's, you know, figuring out that the baby is in Belfast. And that's the very end of the... Oh, yeah, and then Katie Sagal collapsing.
Yeah. So when they go to Belfast, and this has nothing to do with the actual content, really, of the show. When they go to Belfast, you're going to notice something different about the show. They make a small change.
Well, you had mentioned the theme song.
Did I mention that?
Yeah,
I didn't mention that. Yeah, so they do this like weird sort of Gaelic arrangement of the song, which actually works really well. It's a thing that like shouldn't work, but it does. I think season 3 is a bit of a rough patch going on with some of the plot lines. But overall, you know, like Bad Sons of Anarchy episodes are still so much better than everything else on television for the most part.
Yeah, this season the show has gotten really... It's gotten really chaotic, and that started in season 2. That it's just like it was almost like they just started piling too many storylines on top of each other, and intertwining, and it's just like it seems like there's just way too much going on. Like, you know, accidentally killing the caregiver chick was just more than actually needed to happen,
right?
You know, it's like really this is the first time I think in the entire entire series so far that I just went, really? You had to do that? Because, no.
They've got this weakness for painting people into multiple corners at the same time, which, again, you can do every so often, but they do it a little too often this season. I will say, however, this season ends. The third season finale is really, really good, and no fooling, Ali Walker is so freaking good as Agent Stahl, the FBI agent.
Yeah.
It is just, I mean, I'm all for Katie Sagal getting that Emmy nomination or whatever it was, but was it an Emmy or Golden Globe? It was an Emmy,
Golden Globe nomination.
It was one of the two.
Yeah.
But it really should have been Ali Walker, who is just, the great thing about Ali Walker on Sons of Anarchy is that I can never tell when she's telling the truth and when she's not. I mean, every time, and she's done it like 70 times already by the time you even get to season 3, where she goes, Jax, look, I know that we've lied to each other in the past, but we're just going to have to trust each other this time, because otherwise neither of us will walk out of this thing. And you go, okay,
maybe she's done with this
time. I guess she's coming around. But you know what she is? She is like perpetually pulling, she is Lucy pulling the football away from Jax's Charlie Brown. And it's like, and he constantly falls for it.
Yeah.
And it's like, but so do I. I'm sitting there watching it going, well, I think she's being forthright for once. And then and then she just screws everybody again. But I can never tell.
Two things that I've really loved, though. One, I welcome any opportunity to watch one of my major imaginary TV boyfriends, Titus Welliver.
Yes.
Any chance I get to watch Titus Welliver do anything. And in this, he has an Irish accent.
It's true.
And then the music, ever since they started getting really focused on the IRA, the music has gotten really just exceptionally good. There was this one sequence, and I don't know if it was the very end of season 2 or if it was here in season, I think it might have been the first episode of season 3, where there's this whole big long sequence of people running around doing stuff set to Richard Thompson's My Dad's Gonna Kill Me,
right,
which is so good, and that song is so good.
It really, they have an exceptional knack for picking the right song on that show. And that started all the way back in season, I think it was season 1, where they play that Curtis Salgado song, that John the Revelator, and I think it's in the whole, spoiler, it's in the whole thing where Donna's about to get taken down, and there's the, you know, and it's like there's the long, slow, you know, shots of the vehicle and her driving and then the gun coming up, and they're playing just this horrible, like, biblical, apocalyptic, you know, vision set to this wonderful song. And yeah, I'm really glad that you're on season 3, because soon you'll be caught up, and then you're going to be caught up with that around the same time I'm going to be caught up with House.
Aha.
And then we'll be on the same page at long freaking last.
Okay.
All right. Well, that's it. So coming up this Friday, we got the big Christmas Eve show. Behind the Christmas, Ebenezer, I Barely Knew Her, Tim Riley's Frank Sinatra Christmas special, all of that coming up here in just a short while on this very fine radio program today. We'll have Kristen Bowie, listener Sean in later on to do your top 5 modern Christmas songs. And right now at the news desk, we have Dawn Taylor giving you headlines, substance, comedy, amusements, and glib witticisms of all varieties.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
The publisher of the popular The Smurfs Village game for the iPad and iPhone, has added a warning that virtual items such as Smurf berries cost real money. An Associated Press story earlier this month revealed that parents have been surprised by charges racked up by their kids when they play games such as Smurfs Village. The games are free to download, but allow in-game purchases of virtual items like Smurf berries. Two taps can buy $100 worth of Smurf berries, which are then charged to your iTunes account.
Wow, really?
Capcom Entertainment updated the game on Sunday. When the game starts up for the first time, a pop-up now warns that the option to purchase Smurf Berries charges you actual money.
You know, this is like that guy who created that iPhone app called Make Me Rich, and it cost $10,000 and it did nothing. And they sold like three of them before Apple finally caught wind of what was going on. The whole phenomenon of charging real money for in-game items is just such a fascinating thing to me. I mean, that is just, you know, because they do that with Warcraft all the time. Yeah. You know, there's guys who will create a character level, you know, they'll get to a skill level of whatever, and then they'll sell it on eBay to some guy.
Well, that's how the guys who invented Farmville have just, I mean, they've got Farmville, and they've got a whole bunch of other Farmville-like games, like Petville and Who's Itville and what have you. But the thing is that they just figured out this system for making a metric assload of money because it's on Facebook, which allows them access to, like, you know, millions of people. Then the game is set up in such a way that to actually play the game effectively, you have to recruit other people who are friends of yours on Facebook
right.
to be nearby farmers. Then, so that, of course, all of this is increasing the click-through rate and the amount of visitors, which increases their ability to sell advertising. So they're making huge amounts of advertising dollars. Then, plus, there's this whole thing of like, oh, if you don't want to work so hard and don't want to spend so much time farming, you can just buy credits for actual money
right.
so that you can get that mansion and build it on your farm right now. So send us like, you know, $5, $10, $20, and you'll get X amount of credits. And it's like, you know, they are making just millions upon millions of dollars on these games because of that.
Hey, just to, on another facet of this same jewel. Well, first of all, can I tell you how hard I tried a few months back to get. There was a guest that was pimping themselves around, and unbelievably, her schedule was so busy that I was not able to get her on the show. But it was the woman who has co-written the Smurfs graphic novel. That is because as the Smurfs movie has that already come out. Because they were making a Smurf CGI.
No, they're still working on that.
Okay,
yeah.
So there's a graphic novel that they created to tie in with it, and I so desperately wanted to get the woman who wrote the Smurfs graphic novel on the show, just because I could not possibly care less about it. But it's like I care so little about it, and it seems like such a bad idea that it then just became kind of fascinating. Like I wanted to know. Like, was she really a Smurfs fan, or did she just get picked to write it, and did she have to research it? And, I mean, what goes into writing a Smurfs graphic novel, and how many liberties are you allowed to take with the, you know, with the characters, you know, and how long does it take to create the plot for a graphic novel, you know, about the Smurfs?
I have an old friend that I lost touch with over the years, and then we sort of reconnected via the internet a few years ago, and I discovered that he was making apparently a fine living for himself and supporting his children as a writer of children's books, but writing very specific children's books. Like he writes Simpsons like tie-in books. And they're like aimed at kids. They're kids' books. I think he's written a couple of like Scooby-Doo books. And so everything he's writing pretty much is like some kind of licensing thing under some kind of umbrella. And I've always, yeah, and it's the same thing. I've always been curious about like, do they give you a plot? Do they give you outlines? What kind of outlines do you get of like what you can do and what you can't do?
So like being a guy who does novelizations of screenplays or something, you know, like an Alan Dean Foster
yeah.
type, where it's like you get the screenplay for, you know, The Last Starfighter, and then you got to make it into a, you know, you got to make it into a novel. That to me is just, see, to me that would be the best of all possible worlds. You know, if you were a guy who like, you know, if you were a writer, you know, professionally, it seems like that's the thing you'd want to do because that's a thing. If you are even halfway competent, you can probably just knock that stuff out in your sleep, which then gives you one, you know, you get your door in the, you know, your foot in the door of the publishing industry. And then plus, you know, you can just spend the rest of the time writing your own stuff. But it seems like how difficult can it be to write like a Scooby-Doo tie-in book?
You'd think. I don't know. But I don't know. That's the thing. I really have no idea.
Here's the thing is I wasn't even really going to ask about that, though. I don't know how we got sidetracked, but I was going to ask. The thing with Smurf berries, like in the actual Smurf universe,
okay.
What is the point? Like, why do they have them? And are the Smurfs there to guard the Smurf berry forest? And does Gargamel want to? Is Gargamel's goal to get the Smurf berries, or is it like to kill the Smurfs, or to somehow capture them?
Here's something.
You've never watched the Smurfs.
I know nothing about the Smurfs. I never watched.
Well, that was a brief conversation.
I know almost nothing about them. I know that there's like one girl and everybody else is female. I know that I believe Hank Azaria is playing Gargamel in the movie. I don't know anything about the Smurfs. It was one of those TV shows that just the mere sound of it I found so irritating. I never watched it. I can't stand the sound of their voices. So I never watched the Smurfs.
Never mind then.
I'm sorry.
Well, no, that's fine. It's all right.
You couldn't answer my question about Bunny Rabbit on Captain Kangaroo and all the ping pong balls either. So,
No. And, you know, in a way, this is it's all for the good because because someday I'm going to be like 85 years of age or whatever, and I'm going to be sitting there just breathing my last and just rasping out my essence, you know, on the nursing home bed, and just looking back on the many, many wasted opportunities and ruined chances in my life. And I will be able to say at the very least that I am 20 seconds further from death because I did not then spend additional time talking about the Smurfs today, December 21st, 2010.
Yeah.
I will make this one small observation, though, if anybody should ever ask you. The Smurfs, their form of government, a patriarchal theocracy. Just like in case that should ever come up,
Papa Smurf? He was the guy with the beard. Was he the one who was in charge of everything?
Geek trivia night. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. He. Everybody else wore just the little white pants, little white like a little painter outfit. He had.
He had a red hat,
red pants, white beard. Was a wizard, and also ran the entire joint. So So it is a patriarchal theocracy, which is a conclusion that I came to. I swear to God, when I was in high school, we were on a debate club trip. We went to a debate tournament in Moses Lake, and we spent, I don't know, it seems, in retrospect, it might not have been this long, but it might have been much longer. It seems like we spent about 3 hours in a minivan, during which undoubtedly our debate coach wanted to kill himself, just going back and forth and yelling at each other like a progressively louder and more strident tones of voice about what form of government it is the Smurfs actually had. But by the end of the trip, we all agreed that like that was an answer on which we could all sort of come down. Like none of us could really find fault with that. So the government form that the Smurfs have in the Smurf Village, patriarchal theocracy. Just like if you're ever asked about that.
Now, is there like a whole world of Smurfs, or because it's a Smurfs?
It's a world of Smurfs.
Well, because it's Smurfs Village, so that indicates that it's just.
Is there a larger Smurfs world?
Small little enclave. Is there a larger world of Smurfs?
That's a good question. And does it intersect with the Snorks world? Because you know the Snorks. There were the Snorks, and they were the yellow creatures with the horn on their head.
And was that in the same cartoon?
Well, they were made by the same guy, and they were approximately the same. I mean, they were a slight. Here's what this. Do you remember the Snorks?
Yeah, vaguely.
Okay, the Snorks again. They looked more or less like Smurfs, but with a horn, not like a unicorn horn, but like a horn on their head. If you were to create a knockoff of the Smurfs, it would be the Snorks. That's how similar they look. I mean, they're a slightly different skin color, and they've got, you know, and their anatomy is ever so slightly different, but they seemed like more or less the same creature. And they were created by the same artist. So I wonder if the two worlds somehow, intersect, or if there's some, you know.
Maybe they all lived together in harmony at one time, but then Papa Smurf like basically seceded all of the Smurfs away, and it's like a cult.
I don't know. All right. Well, in any event. Also, blah, 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 blah. Smurfette created by Gargamel, blah, blah, blah. Black hair, blonde, blah, blah, blah. So there you go. All right. It's a whole thing. Hey, here's an interesting thing, by the way.
Yes.
And I see how I've just completely undercut my whole desire to not talk about the Smurfs. This is one of the many. I was talking. Did you, Mark? There's a guy named Marcus Cito who you may or may not know. Marcus Cito is a writer and opera singer. Was an opera singer, now he's a writer. He writes. He's been on Livewire a lot. He wrote a holiday one man show called Holidays, which plays usually every December here. He wrote a book called I believe it was called How I Paid for College. He does a lot of stuff for NPR and whatever. But he was on Outlook Portland one time, and we were talking, I think off the air, maybe about. This is a long story, but it'll be worth it.
Okay.
I was talking about The Simpsons and about what a great writing staff they have. And I was talking about Al Jean from The Simpsons, who wrote the best wordplay they've ever had. And the best wordplay ever on The Simpsons is when Lisa Simpson is talking about how she relaxes. And she says, well, I relax in a lot of ways. Tai Chi, Chai Tea. And I thought, my God, Tai Chi, Chai Tea, it's the best wordplay. And I was just so astounded that that had never existed. You know, but it had been sitting there all that time. Nobody had ever come up with that little, you know, that little play on words. So I'm telling Mark Aceto this story, and it was a part of some larger philosophical discussion about how jokes are sort of like artifacts that are just waiting there to be dug up. That play on words was just sitting there waiting for somebody to use it. And so I'm telling him this story, and apparently the entire time, what I did not know is he was in the process of he'd been writing some new piece or some new whatever, in which that exact play on words played a significant role. And he believed that he was the first one to have come up with it because he had never seen the Simpsons episode. And so I just, like, in one moment, I just crushed, like, this entire thing that he was working on because and his face just fell. And he said, what do you mean that joke is in The Simpsons? And I said, yeah, Chai Tea, Tai Chi, it's in The Simpsons. And he fell into this like, deep, like, resigned silence. And apparently he thought that he had come up with that and he had structured a whole thing around it. That, though, led to this conversation with Mark and with Courtney Hameister, which you have probably had. You have probably had this conversation or thought about it. That because of the internet, do you feel like this? That because of the internet, sort of small pop culture observations or bits of trivia have now sort of been stolen from you on occasion by somebody who will put them in a movie, or they'll put them in a song, and then suddenly it is not the cool thing that only you know, or the thing that you have thought of, that somebody else has done. And so that's my thing with the Smurfs, for example, because in Donnie Darko, there is this sequence where Jake Gyllenhaal is doing a little monologue about the creation of Smurfette. And he notes that Smurfette was actually created by Gargamel, who was the villain, to cause chaos and havoc among the Smurfs because there are no women there. It's an all male enclave. So Gargamel actually creates her in like a cauldron. Out of, Eye of Newt and Wing of Bat, and the hardest stone for her heart, and then sends her into the Smurf village, where I swear to Christ, her pickup line is, "Hi, big boy, do you like what you see?" by putting one hand on her hip coquettishly at the same time. And that's how she attempts to seduce all the other Smurfs, and then they turn her good at the end. And when they turn her good, her hair turns from black to blonde, and it's just the weirdest thing. But so Jake Gyllenhaal has this whole monologue in Donnie Darko about Gargamel creating Smurfette. And I remember watching that in the theater and being so pissed off that that was no longer a thing I could impress people with at parties because they would just think I was ripping off the Donnie Darko movie.
That is the creepiest thing, though, when you think about what that implies about just the relationship between men and women, and what the people who wrote that and created that must think about women.
Yeah, no,
that's disturbing.
That is the deal. There's an entire little mushroom village of Smurfs, and it's like they're all men, and they all live there together, and there are no women anywhere. And the men all look exactly the same. They are all blue skin, no shirt, white hat, white pants. Gargamel, wanting to cause chaos and discord and strife, either because he hates the Smurfs or because he wants the Smurf berries, one of the two, creates Smurfette. And when he creates her, she has this like black straw-like sort of dry kind of ugly hair, but she's very clearly a woman. And he sends her into the village. And the first Smurf she comes across is, I think it's like Brainy Smurf or somebody. And she really, and keep in mind, this is a cartoon for like 6-year-olds. She does put her hand on her hip, and she like kind of cocks her hips a little bit and kind of tilts her head, and she says, "Hi, big boy, do you like what you see?"
And considering that all of the Smurfs have only ever known other male Smurfs their entire life, he probably wouldn't like what he sees. He would be confused by what he sees.
Yes.
He would think that she was like, well, first of all, she's a Smurf he's never seen before, and he must know everyone in the village. There aren't that many of them. And second of all, there's something just like weirdly different about it. He would probably think that she was deformed and wrong. He would grab a stick and kill her.
I forget exactly what happens, but I think that all the Smurfs end up fighting over her because they all want her for their own. She apparently her choice doesn't factor into that at any juncture.
When does it really?
And I think that Papa Smurf has to put the smack down at some point because the entire village, like, nobody's getting anything done, none of the work is getting handled, and meanwhile Gargamel is going in. He's using it as a diversionary tactic to go in and do something. Rather, and I forget the mechanism by which this occurs, but Smurf Fett is transformed from evil to good at the end of the episode and coincidentally becomes much more attractive, and she gets this like long, flowing, lustrous blonde hair.
But of course, I'm thinking now, of course, she is no longer an object of desire.
Yes.
To all the Smurfs. Now she's just one of the guys. Everyone likes her.
Yes.
So of course, you know, when you're a good girl, you are desexualized.
Yes.
But when you have sexuality, you know, and you're hot, you are therefore evil and you create chaos wherever you go.
Yes. This is not Rick Emerson saying these things, you understand. What was my point? Oh, but so now that doesn't really impress people other than it impresses you because you're not really a Smurf savvy and maybe,
no,
you know. And,
this is all new to me.
And, you know, but post Donnie Darko, none of my Smurfs observations, except for the patriarchal theocracy thing, none of them impress anybody.
No, I have an anger directed at Nora Ephron, partly because she's made a lot of crap that I hate, but also because in the movie in Sleepless in Seattle, there's a scene where Tom Hanks and then this couple who are friends of his, who are played by his real-life wife, Rita Wilson, and the guy who was Sidney Bristow's dad on Alias. And she starts talking about the movie An Affair to Remember. And it basically, Nora Ephron posits the thing of like all women everywhere know about the movie An Affair to Remember and are crazy for it. And she talks about the ending of An Affair to Remember and how awesome it is and how it makes her cry every single time. And the thing is, ever since I was an adolescent, I have been madly in love with this movie, An Affair to Remember. No one I ever knew had watched it. Ever, ever, ever. I would make people sit down and watch this movie. And still, to this day, I still weep like Nancy Kerrigan at the end of this movie every single time. But it made me so angry that Nora Ephron would just create a whole cloth, this mythos that all women know about this movie and all women watch it and cry. Because this was my movie that nobody ever watched except for me that made me cry.
And now if you ever tell anybody, oh, I cry like a baby at the end, they go, ah, just like in Sleepless in Seattle.
Oh, yeah, all women cry at that movie. It's like they don't.
You're no longer special, Dawn.
Yeah. It ruined my special cry movie.
I remember being, I don't know, maybe this is like in 1995, 1996, when I used to be much more strident about like everything, improbably. I don't know, I was out somewhere with some of my friends. We were at a restaurant or doing something or other. And anyway, but we got to the end of the evening, and I forget the circumstances that led up to this. But we were leaving some business, and everybody was like piling in for the tip, and I opined that I didn't necessarily want to tip the person, and then you know before I could even explain and try to justify why, somebody else in the group said, "Oh, quit doing the Reservoir Dogs thing. Just kick in your tip." And I was like, But it's a thing I really believe. And it was like Tarantino had stolen. He had just gone in to our culture while I slept, and he had stolen my right to opt out of a tip by depicting any desire to not tip as just being ripping off the Reservoir Dogs thing. It was no longer a thing I actually believed.
Yeah.
It was somehow impossible to depict it as a thing that I actually felt or that I might actually, embrace as a philosophy. It was now that I was just trying to be Steve Buscemi. So F you, Quentin Tarantino. That's what I have to say. F you in the ear.
And Nora Ephron, too.
With a steel dildo. You were listening to the Rick Emerson. That was for Cheryl. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for listening. It's 503-505-6964. Cheryl, by the way, who says that Kristen Bowie is waiting in the green room / break room. So we'll do this little break. We'll come back. Still to come, Cannibal Watch, Joy of Christmas. We'll do the top five with listener Sean. He'll be counting on the top five modern Christmas songs. That is post-1970, I believe. And what else? We'll get to the bottom of this business with my wife and the Settlers of Catan and the yelling and the shouting and the hey, hey. Stay there. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. We're back after this. Don't go anywhere.
Of a white Christmas,
just like the one
I used to know,
where the treetops glisten and kiddies listen
to hear
News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. In just a moment, we'll be joined by our good friend Kristen Bowie. Later on, listener Sean will be in the studio with his top five modern...
Is this post-1970 or just modern as like a catch-all sort of designation?
All right. So these are going to be, I would say, non-standards. We'll put it that way.
Ah.
Non-standard Christmas songs. So that'll be coming up later on. We want to take a moment to talk about Squires Electric, one of our fine business partners. You can find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com or calling 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, supervisors, and contractors. That means as you look toward 2011, and if you're going to be expanding your business, if you're going to be getting a second office, maybe remodeling your home, maybe building a home from scratch, maybe you've taken over one of those like strange antebellum homes in John's Landing that appears to have been built in like 1752. It's got one outlet, you know, in the entire house, and you just find yourself running... There's like myriad extension cables. By the way...
Maybe you're building a spaceship.
Or you're building a spaceship, sure. Oh, my God. So I didn't even tell you... Okay, here's the thing about building a spaceship. And you had no idea that that was the thing I was going to say after the thing that you said.
No,
but let me say this thing about that.
Okay.
So That collection of Mad magazines that were so graciously dropped off by a listener a while back. So, you know, I took all those home and I was looking through them. First of all, let me just say this about those Mad magazines that were dropped off. The guy's dad, you know, the improbably, you know what the guy's dad did or did not do, which is a rarity? He all of these sort of premium items that were inserted into the spine of the magazine upon release were still there.
Ooh.
Like the little vinyl records that you pull out and that you put on your turntable that used to come inside Mad magazines.
Is the foldy thing in the back?
The fold-in is not folded in.
Oh, wow.
Also, there was this legendary, it was called a super special, but it was sort of a compilation, you know, that Mad magazine would put out every now and again. I think it was twice a year they would put out compilation, you know, just collections of all of their previously, you know, published crap. But then they would put in some sort of a collectible item. And one of the most sought after collectible items is a kit that you could put together a mobile from. And it was for the fabled Mad Zeppelin.
I remember that.
Here's the thing.
Oh,
All of the pieces for the Mad Zeppelin mobile still attached in the spine of the Mad magazine itself.
Wow.
I'm not going to sell them, but I mean, if I were, that's a thing that like...
That's awesome.
Keeping your action figure in the package. I mean, it ups the resale value like exponentially. Here's the thing, though. In that pile of Mad magazines, you know what was secreted or not secreted? That would be disgusting. But secreted like halfway down, an issue of Popular Mechanics from like 1956. And it did. It was one of those, like, you know, build your own flying contraption. You know, it had, like, instructions for building all of, like, your own homemade, you know, like, the magical devices of the future. I'll have to bring it in so you can look at it.
Please.
It's wonderful. Well, in any event. So
if we were to build one of those things.
If you're going to be building one of those things, or, you know, if you have a house from that era, it may not be wired and cabled properly for all of your fantastical electrical appliances of tomorrow. Read today. So you contact Squires Electric at 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. Or go to squireselectric.com. Electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring of any kind, manner, fashion, shape, size, or sort. They can help you with that. That is SquiresElectric.com, a proud sponsor of this, the Rick Emerson radio program.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
All right, then. It is 503-252. I guess that's the wrong number there. Let me just minimize that so I don't read everything on the screen like a gibbon. 503-505-6964 coming up later on this hour. We got your top five. Don't forget this coming Friday, the Rick Emerson Show's Christmas Eve special featuring Ebenezer, I Barely Knew Her, an encore of Behind the Christmas, and Tim Riley's Frank Sinatra Christmas Extravaganza.
Speaking of Christmas, I wanted to thank you for playing the clip from Bad Santa this morning. Because Bad Santa, not just one of my favorite Christmas movies, but one of my favorite movies of all time. And coincidentally, I just told my husband this morning before I came into the studio that I had decided that if anybody asked me what I want for Christmas, I'm going to say Fraggle Stick Car.
Excellent. Here's the thing about Bad Santa is that I'm not going to say it's entirely because of Billy Bob Thornton, because it's a well-written movie, but that is a movie that really, it could have easily been bad.
Mm.
You know, the whole concept of, like, he's Santa, but he's bad, and he's, you know, and it's like if you... It's just one of those things that, like, you know, they so easily could have put, like, Rob Schneider or somebody in.
Oh, yeah.
Or just, you know, it's just some loathsome, horrible douche of an actor, and it just would have been awful. And it's like Billy Bob Thornton has got that because he's such a great actor and he's so textured and he's just got so many, like, weird gradients to his on-screen persona that he's able to make something like that work. And the other thing about Bad Santa is that it pulls off one of the neatest cinematic tricks, which is to get the sweet sentiment without being cloying and to get it honestly.
Yes.
To work for it. Like Arrested Development did that really well, and Futurama does it well, you know, from time to time, where they can honestly earn the sort of awe moment at the end, because otherwise it's like, you know, you're just watching a bunch of chess pieces be sort of crudely moved around by a director. Plus, Lauren Graham, hot as balls. So, I mean, there's that as well. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson radio program a longtime friend of the show. And I believe her first time in this studio, it was mentioned to me last month. I guess she hadn't been invited. I sent you an invitation, but it was lost in the mail.
Oh, I'm sure that's how that worked out.
Our good friend Kristen Bowie, who was also heard on Cascadia.fm. Let's figure this out right now. When and how often are you on Cascadia.fm?
I'm on Monday through Friday.
So it is? It is every weekday.
Yeah, I'm afternoon drive.
Excellent. Good for you. All right. So what time is that on?
5 p.m.
And is this Don't Panic Portland?
Yeah, Don't Panic.
5 p.m. to 6 p.m.?
5 to 5:30.
5 to 5:30. All right, hold on. Just writing this down right now because Dawn and I, and I apologize, we just weren't quite sure how many days a week it was.
Well, it did. It didn't used to be.
It was on this weird schedule where we were on 3 days a week.
All right, don't.
But that's
Monday
changed.
To Friday. And what sorts of discussions and topics and goings on might people hear there?
Oh, well, I mean, obviously, video games.
All right.
In general, nerdery, pop culture. Yeah, yeah. Oh,
all right.
You're circling
I'm
it.
Circling
you're
it.
You're actually
no,
going to try and remember it this time.
I just look. There's no need. Look, there's no need to be caustic.
It's said with love, Rick.
So I'm regretting this already. So on Thanksgiving, you had actually called in and you'd said hello, and I said, well, you got to come by and check out the studio. And then there was like this brilliant pause. It was of exactly the right length. And then just like you just said it in this voice that can only be described as just being sweet as pie. And you said, well, maybe if I was invited. And then you just sort of let it trail off like elliptically. And it was perfect, Lean, because I felt like a dick for the rest of the day. I just felt like such a terrible person. So thank you for coming by.
As one should on Thanksgiving,
well,
presumably.
And
right?
To add to the dickishness, the great thing is that I get think last, not this past, but it'd be like 10 days ago Sunday, I actually was emailing you from the Salt Lake City International Airport saying, hey, I know that I still never really invited you to come by the studio, and by the way, I haven't talked to you in like 6 months. Can you fill in for Dawn tomorrow? That would be awesome. Thank you.
No,
and
no,
also,
wait.
You won't be paid. Goodbye.
What you said is Monday, and I got the email on Monday, so I figured it was for the following Monday.
Yeah, no. No, yeah. That was also me. That was me not just being rude, but also being terribly, terribly dumb. So how have you been, Kristen, housewife?
Fabulous.
She
wonderful.
Moved.
Yes.
She Woo. Moved, and we had talked about her on the air recently, and you had said a certain radio personality that you knew who was living in Gresham, and I said, oh, would that be Kristen Bowie? And you went, no, oh. It's not Kristen Bowie.
Yeah.
And then I said, I swear to God, I thought she was living in Gresham, and you were like, what? And
did I really say this?
Yes. And then here we are. We talked. She just told me she moved. I said, oh, I was living in Gresham. I said, I knew you were living in Gresham. I knew it.
Now, are you from Gresham originally?
I grew up in Gresham.
Okay. I guess,
and I just had a small, like, month-long stint in there. But I've thus escaped.
I guess, yeah, see, that was my thing. Is I think I operated under the assumption that anybody in Gresham would just, at the first opportunity, would just run for the border.
Well, unless it's really, you know, there's certain people in Gresham that are never going to leave Gresham.
Well, that's
you just
true.
Kind of know it.
So let's clarify a couple of things here that just okay. We were sort of talking about earlier. Not that this really matters to the, you know, the grand scheme of things, but I like to get all the stuff straight in my head. When did you present? Because you're not like at CBS, or you were not working in terrestrial radio
no,
at this point.
No,
at all.
Not at all.
When did you leave CBS?
End
or
of January.
Alpha? You know, yeah. So it was at the mm-hmm. end of January this
yeah.
year.
Yeah.
So now did you leave, or were you shown the door?
Oh, I left.
You left.
Yeah.
And were you doing any on air stuff at all?
Besides the occasional spot on Kink, no.
All right, so you were doing traffic, which is the handling and scheduling of commercials and
godless
things.
Godless job.
And, well, I you know look, I'm it is you know what traffic is it is an important job. It's a crucial component of what makes radio work. But that being said, it's not a thing that a lot of people are really cut out for.
Rick would walk by when he had his various meetings for whatnot. You know, I'm not even entirely sure on that one, but he would walk by and give me the sad puppy dog eyes, like, aw.
Well, it's...
I feel so bad for you. You're doing that job.
So let's just follow the chain of events here, because this is sort of like an exit interview almost that you and I are having, or like a debriefing.
Is that because we haven't had a chance to have that yet?
Because it's like, what's the first time Jim Willig was on the show too? We did the same thing, because I had never heard the details of how he got blown out. So I always just you know I like to just from my mental file of radio anecdotes to find out how it ended for everybody. This is like the interview in that little room in Beetlejuice where you're sitting next to the shrunken head guy. So you were on air at AM 970, and then were you also on at Couple at that same time?
I was on at Couple, and I was occasionally voice tracking for KUFO, too.
All right. And then did you quit all of that stuff at once and just move over to the paper pushing department?
Oh, I didn't quit that. Like, it just kind of went away.
Really? Was that
I got the phone call from John Paul going, well, we have to talk about something. We're just going to automate Saturdays now.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so
everything just got cut.
Well, so at least, I mean, at least you weren't fired. It wasn't like you were bad. They just said, like, look, we're just automating the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
All right. So they replaced everybody. Had you already started working in the traffic department?
Yeah, kind of on a part-time, occasional basis.
And now did you take the job in the and again? I'm not trying to bust on traffic people because it really is not a thankless job, but it's a job that I couldn't do and I wouldn't want to do because it's like being an accountant. Certain people are cut out for that and certain people are not.
And I found out I was not.
Did I tell you to take that job?
No, you were the only person that told me not to take it. You were the only one who looked at me and was like, don't do it, Kristen.
I'm a genius.
And everybody else was going, you know, it's a full-time job in radio. It's all kind of hard right now. I would take it because it's a full-time job in radio.
All right.
But
so
you were
glad.
The only one that said no.
All right, let's hear it for me. Because I was so, I'm so glad you're talking about it because I was thinking about, like, God, I didn't tell her to take that job. It doesn't sound like something I would do, but who knows? I wasn't in my right mind. I'm so glad to know that I had warned you away from that. But you know, and again, I mean, all you know, in all seriousness, the world needs, you know, adders and subtractors and people who sell you life insurance and whatever. But you're just not that kind of person.
No.
Neither am I. So after I got fired, so I would occasionally go over to the Kink building, which is where you were located.
Yes.
And that is where I won't mention his name, but that was where one of the upper management folks at Alpha had his office. And I this is not a secret. I mentioned this, that after I got fired at CBS, that Alpha Broadcasting asked me not too long after that if I'd be interested in pursuing some sort of online broadcasting venture for them. And I'm also not going to pretend that, like, and I told them to get bent, and
yeah.
because I did no such thing.
I mean, folks in our industry, you know,
look,
job's a job.
Brother got to eat.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's
rent to pay.
Yeah, I mean, look, I have no shame. I can be bought. I can be leased. I can be rented to own. So I had several meetings with them, and it just didn't. It became apparent pretty quickly that wasn't going to work out. The moment when I knew that it wasn't going to work, and the guy with whom I had most of my meetings actually, see, you know, I had no problems with, seemed pretty decent, seemed pretty straightforward about everything, and actually seemed to be on the same page as I was. The moment when I knew it wasn't going to work was when I went to a meeting with him and another person from Alpha, who I will not name, but who spent, I would say, 98% of the time in the meeting showing me the various fart noises his iPhone could make. And, you know, that's just when you have what the Mormons call the still small voice inside telling you, you should leave. You're wasting your life in this meeting. But I would go over to Kink occasionally to have these meetings, and I would pass you sitting in the traffic room, just looking like a mouse in a testing facility somewhere, just with your nose pressed to the glass, just waiting for the syringe. Just kill me. And I would stop in to say a few kind words, not too many, because I didn't want them to think you were in cahoots with anybody. But you just seemed desperately unhappy.
Oh, well, I mean, I walked away from a job with free health insurance, if that's anything.
That's how bad it was. So what are you? So other than the Cascadia thing, what are you doing right now?
I went in business for myself.
Good for
man.
You. What are you
yeah.
doing?
Then same thing I was doing when I was working in radio to, you know, be able to eat was the mobile notary thing. So.
And is that where you just people? I mean, is it just what it sounds like? People need something notarized. They call you and you just appear and you
kind of. I do like mortgages and stuff. So it's still kind of soul crushing. Paper pushing, but
do you have the crimper?
No, they don't allow those in the state of Oregon without the actual stamp anymore.
That sucks. The crimper is awesome.
You can't do the embosser in the state without it. You have to have the stamp as well.
Could you do both?
Yeah, you could do both.
Okay, well, there you go. I mean, as long as you're allowed to use, is that what it's called, an embosser?
Yeah, I'll get an embosser if you pay for it.
Yeah, it looks like a pair of pliers, and
yeah,
then
no,
it's got the seal.
Yeah.
How much would one of those cost?
Like $35-$40.
Oh, I'll totally. Yeah.
I'll make everything sparkly.
It's not valid without a stamp, right?
Yeah.
So I could use it. I could emboss things with it.
With my name on it.
Well, I'm just saying, but like, it's not going to get you in any trouble, right? Because it's not going to have a stamp. It would be powerless.
What are we going to be stamping here?
Nothing.
Nothing.
I just
next thing I know, the state's like knocking on my front door.
You've notarized all of these things for Rick Emerson.
I now own your home. I've just never gotten a chance to use one of those. So I just, okay, at some point, it probably won't be for Christmas, but maybe for like Arbor Day or something, Santa will, you know, he'll drop one of those off. Let's see, we've had somebody calling in here. Hello, sir, madam, as the case may be, you're on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Hey, guys, it's Seamus.
Hello, Seamus. How are you, sir?
I'm right. How's it going?
Kristen?
Quite well.
How's it going?
Yeah, yes. Going well.
Hello, sir. Are you in Boulder proper? Did you move?
I moved closer into Denver, bought a house, you know, have neighbors.
So is this the time where I have to ask if it's snowing where you are? Are you in like in the middle of one of those hell blizzards?
No, actually it's cold as hell, but it's not snowing yet.
Are you calling from your $800 beanbag?
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. That is exactly the answer.
Is that the love sack?
It's not a love sack. A love sack is something else.
No.
It is called a love sack.
Those giant, expensive
beanbags. The same thing, but about half as expensive.
This is the comfy sack, right?
Right.
Yeah.
They're exactly the same thing, but they're not sold in the mall. And
there's
so
no love.
$2,000. They're way cheaper.
All right. So this is the. How big would you say? Because I have many people ask about this. This $800 beanbag of yours. How large would you say it is?
Actually, it was only like five something. Because it was on sale, but it's not, yeah, it's definitely not $800. But it's 8 foot diameter, and
that's
it's about
awesome.
3 foot tall.
And so does it take 2 weeks to inflate all the way?
It takes like 2 weeks for everything to kind of expand because it uses that memory foam stuff that's all shredded up and, you know, and it's sent in these super compressed boxes. So it fits in like, you know, a reasonable amount of space, and you have to tear it open and drop these into the liner, and then you cut it and run before it all explodes.
So that was the thing, right? Is it was like they don't want to send you the whole expanded beanbag because that would just cost, it would be unwieldy and cost a lot. So they compress it all down like Fantastic Voyage style, and then
yeah, it's like 200 pounds if you know once it's all together and everything. I mean, it's pretty heavy.
Let me just ask you this though. I mean, just no fooling, straight up, $500 and some for a beanbag. Is it worth it?
Oh, hell yeah.
Awesome. All right.
I'd spend that much.
Yeah.
This is where I do all my gaming from and my work from. Okay. And sometimes gaming.
Excellent. How can we be of assistance to you today, sir?
I was just calling because, you know, I heard Kristen on the radio and I'm sorry, on the internet.
Yes.
And I hadn't talked to her in a while and I just wanted to mention how, you know, how great it was to see her continuing to do the kind of things that she was interested in doing and not... I mean, we keep in touch. We've got mutual friends and stuff. So,
definitely.
I kind of, you know, followed along when, you know, she would text out to everybody, hey, I'm going to be on Couple tonight. I'm doing the Midnight Christmas show or.
Oh, that's so cute. You would actually tell people you were going to be doing like your evening air shift at Couple.
Yes.
Oh, that's adorable.
I figured I was going to be there for 6 hours. I might as well get something to do.
No, I'm not. I don't mean this. I don't mean that in like an Eddie Haskell kind of way. I mean, it's just I was talking to my wife about this because she is now at this point in her job where they're like, she gets these kids that are right out of like nursing school and they are assigned to her and she's, you know, it's like doing rotations or whatever. You know, it's like on House where they like, you know, they like the young crop of wet behind the ears doctors are following him around. So she is now like that person that has like these young kids like ducklings just trailing her everywhere she goes in the hospital. And we were talking about how weird it is, like especially for me because I'm just a big goober. And it's like, you know, the idea that either of us have reached the point in our lives where we'd be like a mentor or a teacher is just so bizarre. But it is, I know you're not on radio anymore, Krista, but it really is charming in the best possible way that like you cared enough about your evening shift or your weekend shift on Couple to actually be putting internet updates up, you know, so like people could tune in and listen because it's like, you know, because one hears a lot of things about, you know, the death of radio and how nobody finds it interesting or nobody finds it, you know, that it is, it's a thing tied to an earlier era. And I was hearing that 10 or 15 years ago. So it's, I mean, it's, you know, so
definitely.
It was great that you were such a true believer about it, even though you have moved on.
Well, I mean, the medium, the art form in general, I introduced somebody to Phil Henry last night who had never heard them before, ever. And yeah. instant follower, instant fan. It was just cool to watch that go down, you know?
You wrote like some, and I remember reading something about this, whether it was a reference to the actual piece, but you wrote like an essay or an article or a blog or something about radio, right?
Yeah, why I left radio.
And is it, I mean, do you plan on, you're not going back, you're done?
As of right now, no, I'm not going back because here's the thing. You're told as a person starting out in radio, which, you know, are fewer and fewer now because there are no jobs to start out with. But you're told and coached as a person in radio that the only person that can give you the power to be on the air is your program director. And I think that's kind of changing with the internet. You know, you're able to not have consultants and enjoy what you're doing again.
Did you enjoy being on the radio?
Not music radio.
So you enjoyed talk radio, but you didn't enjoy the music radio because of the music, or you didn't enjoy it because of the constraints that were on?
A little bit of both. I mean, I wasn't allowed on music radio to say words that had more than three syllables. I got in trouble for saying a word that had more than three syllables. And they go, "You don't want to talk over their heads, Kristen." I'm like, "But don't you want to challenge them?
Don't you want to make them think?
No. Use that gray matter a little bit?"
Rick told me that he had gotten some complaints that that Christy Turnquist and I were too smart.
Yes.
Because, you know, you're not some laugh box doing the traffic reports every 15 minutes.
Our words were too big or something.
It's because you just weren't giggling and breathing heavily into the microphone.
About meat in a salacious manner.
Yeah, no, that's and I would frequently get the the criticism of like, "Well, we're not telling you to tone it down or to dumb it down." But then the "we're not telling you to dumb it down" was followed several times. In this exact wording with them saying, "You know, that Dawn Taylor, she sounds a little too smart." So it was like they wanted me to just kick you in the head a few times or something, like
she
before
knows
you
how to use words.
Yeah,
talking about ideas and things.
This thing, you know, she'll want to vote and this have ideas and original thought and own property. And
now that we're all here, actually, together, this is also a good time to note that was, in fact, by the way, that was me that you saw on Xbox Live the other night, Seamus. That was not my wife. She's the one who does most of the online gaming in the house at this point, but that actually was me a few nights back.
I'm still waiting for my Left 4 Dead 2 invitation, by the way.
I'm sorry.
Much like the studio invitation.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I've occasionally thought of jumping on and playing Catan with you guys or your wife, and then I thought, you know, either I'm going to get my ass kicked and I'll never live it down, or, you know, it'll be one of those knockdown, drag-out fights that you already described as ongoing, and you know, that would be no fun.
Yeah, if you see Settlers of Catan being played, that is always her. That's not a thing that is not a thing. If it doesn't involve shooting or explosions of some kind, it's probably her. If there's a flamethrower involved, or if there's like women possessed of large grapefruit like bosoms covered with chainmail, that is probably me. So that's the way to tell us apart online.
Well, I just want to finish what I was going to say about Kristen is. The main reason I called is I just want to say how great it is to see her still kind of going on with her original interests, you know, in doing talk shows and you know, being on the creative side and everything. Because
thank you.
I remember how much that whole time period absolutely sucked, and it wasn't fun watching people, especially you, go from having two or three shows that you were doing and spotting here and there to suddenly having all that taken away. And We've seen certain other people with aspirations to do entertainment, radio, whatever, who maybe bought too many trucks and houses that they could afford, then having to give up on their dream, and we never hear from them again.
Yeah.
The sad thing is, there's like five different people that you could be talking about right now. And I honestly don't know to whom you're referring, but I'll just assume it's Scotty J.
This person's name rhymes with Hottie K.
Okay, yes, thank you. That's exactly the first person I went to, so well done. You know, I'm going to just ask you a question, and it's okay. You can be honest here.
I'm his biggest fan, by the way.
Scotty J?
Yeah, well, according to the Vanilla Ice.
You know, you and I are jostling there for space at the front of that queue. Seamus, you can admit something. You can answer this honestly. Are you, in fact, Clarence the Guardian Angel from It's a Wonderful Life? Because, really, it does seem that wherever we go, on this tangled human road that we're walking, you're just sort of like there, like some sort of a benevolent great gazoo at our elbow all the time, offering encouragement and generally being a... Really, no one... It seems impossible that anybody could be... could be as relentlessly good-natured and supportive as you without having something deeply wrong with him.
Oh,
well, I never said I don't have anything deeply wrong with him.
Oh, it's just that that part's not directed at us. Excellent. Okay, great.
So in order to be good, you have to have something wrong with you?
I'm just saying.
Yes.
It's like a mental deficiency in your eyes?
Just saying. It's just if you look back... If you look back at your life, and if you look back at all of the good and generous and kind things that have been done to you, like 98% of them have come from Seamus. I'm speaking for all of us here.
It's very true. It's
you
very
really,
true.
You really are the you're the pillar that supports the House of Portland Radio, sir.
You are, Seamus.
I don't know if I'd say that, but I do like supporting people who do really cool stuff, and I always remember the day that I went from listening to a bunch of awful political talk radio, because I've been listening to talk radio since I was like 8 years old. And, you know, I was just spinning around the dial looking for something because I work from home and, you know, like 10 years ago. And all of a sudden I came across your show and, you know, I was like, well, what the hell is this? And, you know, after a while I was like, well, why would I listen to a bunch of political hacks argue all day about things that are never going to get resolved when I could listen to like debates over like which the best Transformer is? You know?
Excellent. Well, we
this show's about boobs and Smurfs. I love it.
And well, except you know, you guys and the whole circle of people that I've kind of come to meet through you guys. You know, Bobby and you know, Cord and Sarah and you know, even people like Storm and Davey and all these different people. The one common thread everybody seems to have is they're both simultaneously intellectual and very, very lowbrow.
Well, it's sort of a smart filtered through dumb, or possibly the other way around. So, well, it means, I mean, I think I speak for all of us, you know, and it means a lot to have, you know, that you've been out there and been a fan for so long and been so supportive because that, you know, because A, that I think that kind of tells us that we're keeping up our end of the bargain and that we're, you know, offering the entertainment that we want to offer. And, you know, and there's actually a lot of people who fall into this category, people who've been out there, who've supported us and the other shows in a lot of ways that just it would not have been possible, or it would have been much more difficult without folks like yourself. And as we get toward the end of the year, this is sort of, I guess, a good time to be saying all that stuff that really, you know, there's a, you know, you guys really, you do make it a lot easier in a lot of ways. So,
I think you guys are moving into the right venue for appealing to that sort of thing, because now you've got the entire world to kind of pick and choose from, you know, building an audience. So it's no longer how many people can I get in this specific region to give a damn about my content. It's, you know, there may only be one out of 200 people that are really into this specific thing I'm doing, but it's one or 200 people
out of like 4 billion, you know.
Yeah.
You know, billions.
Yeah. I said, all right. Well, okay. There was like just a thing that happened there. All right. We have to skedaddle here only because I have to get my wife on the phone to talk about Settlers of Catan so that we can then move on to the top five so that I can then be done at some point today and go into the kitchen and stuff myself full of starch and butter.
All right. Love you guys. I'm going back to Call of Duty.
Awesome. Thank you, Seamus.
Seamus. There you go. Awesome. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-505-6964. Let me just take a moment to ask listener Sean, are you on a timeline of any kind, sir? Yeah. All right, excellent, fantastic. Your entire day is centered around me and my show?
Till 4:30.
Well, I'll take that. All right.
Something Seamus just said, though, reminded me the whole thing of meeting the sort of extended family of, you know, the tendrils that go out among meeting, you know, Court and Bobby and Kristen and the people that we know. It's like Patrick going through his recent, like, you know, hospital thing. And I was looking at Facebook and I looked up at him. He had just gotten out of the hospital. He said, so Davey Nipples sends his best wishes on your recovery from gallbladder surgery. I said, but those are words you never thought you'd hear.
Seriously. it is the Rick Emerson radio program. Let's do this. Let's go to the news desk. We'll get a couple of stories taken care of. We'll talk some video games. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll have the top five. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
The first American face transplant patient has said a donor saved her from a life of eating and breathing through a tube, but until this weekend, she knew her only as a woman who died in 2008. 2 years after Anna Casper's face was merged with the remnants of Connie Culp's, Casper's family decided to reveal that she was the donor. Mrs. Culp's husband shot her in the face in 2004. The blast destroyed her nose, shattered her cheeks, and shut off most of her vision. Her features were so gnarled that children ran away from her and called her a monster.
Gnarled. Gnarled is a term you don't ever want used to describe your physical appearance.
No. After Mrs. Casper died of a heart attack in 2008, a donor specialist approached Mrs. Casper's family about donating her face. Her family had already agreed to give away her heart, her kidney, her liver, and her eyes. My mom would say, hell, if I can't use it and somebody else can, they can have it, Becky Casper recalled. The Caspers and Mrs. Culp met for the first time this weekend. Mrs. Culp, 47, has been thanking her donor since the surgery, but had never been able to put a name to her. She told the Cleveland Plain Dealer that the get-together went well after some initially awkward moments.
Yes.
They're just really nice people, Mrs. Culp said. It's awesome how much we have in common.
Okay.
Like a face.
Like a face, yeah.
Casper's 23-year-old daughter, Becky, says she can see part of her mother in Mrs. Culp, though their bone structures are different.
I can definitely see the resemblance in the nose, she told the plane dealer. I know she's smiling down on this and she's very happy. By the way, yes, indeed, there is a visual aid.
Oh, please tell me. Did you post it?
A before and after of the woman with the face transplant.
Is this at rickemerson.com?
It is indeed. All right. Backslash pictures.
Excellent. So this is... Oh, let me go there right now. So the woman saying, I can definitely see the resemblance, that is the daughter of the woman who donated the face?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, so that was just... that's mom's nose.
It would just be weird, though. I mean, which I guess is a huge understatement, but it's like, well, they always tell you, like, if you get any amount of, like, substantial plastic surgery, like, if you just get, like a rhinoplasty or something, they want you to sort of go see a counselor or a therapist or something, yeah, and just, to set aside shrink time, because you're going to look in the mirror and the face that you've had for like 30 whatever years is suddenly different. I can't imagine just looking in the mirror and just seeing somebody like an entirely different face.
Yeah.
Looking back, although if
somebody has shot off your face, then probably the idea of just having any face at all, because you're still not going to look good. But at least you're not going to look like you don't have a face.
It's looking like tree beard.
Yes.
All right. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
Let's do our Cannibal Watch.
All right. Here is your Cannibal Watch for Tuesday right here in the Rick Emerson radio program. Don Taylor with your Cannibal Watch.
A British man who admitted to shooting his prostitute victims in the head with a crossbow before dismembering and eating them was sentenced to life in prison Tuesday. Stephen Griffiths, 40, who called himself the crossbow cannibal, pleaded guilty to murdering Susan Rushworth, 43, Shelley Armitage, 31, and Suzanne Blamers, 36, the UK Daily Guardian reports. Griffiths was caught when a building supervisor spotted him in the act on closed-circuit television in Leeds. The supervisor saw an image of someone on the third floor dragging a person into flat 33. Shortly afterwards, a woman ran from the apartment and fell to the floor. Griffiths shot her with a crossbow as she lay on the floor and dragged her into the flat by a leg. Griffiths allegedly toasted the death by raising a can of drink to the closed-circuit camera. Police believe Griffiths might also be responsible for three unsolved murders after he indicated in an interview he had killed six women in total. He claimed he'd cooked and eaten parts of his first two victims, boiling one in a pot, and ate the third one raw.
Now, did he use the... I don't know why I'm horrified by the raw part. I mean, really, in the context of the overall story. Did he use the crossbow for all of them? Do we know?
I'm really not sure.
Because I'm wondering if maybe it was just like, was that just an alliterative choice of his? Like, was he trying to figure out what would flow linguistically for a nickname?
I have no idea. I like to think that he killed all of them with a crossbow. I like consistency in my serial killers.
Well, and also you would imagine that a crossbow probably takes a greater degree of skill. You know, there's I would say that the level of aiming acuity is substantially higher there.
So Suzanne Blamers, or however her name is pronounced, the prosecutor told the court that 81 different pieces of her were found in or by the river in Shipley. A broken knife and a crossbow bolt were embedded in her severed head.
And where was this?
In England.
Okay, not Germany.
Oh, yeah, by the way, Griffiths was known as the weirdo by neighbors in his apartment building.
Maybe that's why he so desperately wanted a different nickname.
He was also known as Penfold after a character in the cartoon show Danger Mouse.
Oh, my God.
Because he wore round, dark glasses, whatever the weather.
That's fantastic. Hey, what was Penfold?
He was a mole, wasn't he?
I don't know.
I think he was a mole, which is why he wore the little dark glasses.
Is that true?
I think he was a mole.
I mean, I have no evidence to the contrary. I don't know that he wasn't a mole. It was just sort of, Danger Mouse, obviously a mouse. I just didn't know what Penfold was. Yet they were depicted as being the same size.
Interesting.
Okay. Or not. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. That's your Cannibal Watch for Tuesday. Let's see here. So before we call my wife to hash out this Catan business, I just got to read a couple of these. Seamus says, sorry to derail everything, which he did not. He said it's had to let Krista know how proud we all are of her. She's a good egg, he says.
You are a good
egg. That's so sweet. Your people are good to me, Rick.
It's true. I like to think a little bit of my inherently charming nature has rubbed off on them over the years.
You know, I keep getting emails from people, and I get a lot of really nice emails from fans and from listeners, and they're fans and listeners being different things entirely, but from listeners. And there's always this sort of undercurrent of it, of like, you're really good, Dawn. You're doing a really good job. As if
they're so encouraging.
Well, and also as if they have to tell me, because I think they think that Rick is like abusive to me, and that and that somebody needs to be kind to me and like keep encouraging me. Because there's always this sort of like, Dawn, you're good. You're doing a good job, really. Just wanted to let you know.
Do they think that every day in here is just like some soul-crushing exercise and spirit-breaking?
I don't know. I think maybe they just, they think, Dawn, oh.
They're the good cop to your bad cop.
Yeah,
apparently.
Because you're so intimidating.
I was going to say, I like to think that I'm relatively easygoing, all things considered.
I know. You're very nice to me. I mean, when you're not, you know, yelling and calling me a whore or something, you're very nice.
Well, that's just out of love. Let's see. What else do we have? We had a couple of other messages. Oh, we've got, let's see. I wonder. I believe Kristen. We talked about you playing World of Warcraft, and we. So I guess we should do this first because I wanted to know. Not that I.
Okay.
There's nothing writing on this. I was just sort of curious because I know you were a big World of Warcraft player, but then you stopped at one point, and we were wondering why it was. And I forget if Dawn actually had a theory or not about why you quit playing World of Warcraft.
She told me, but I don't remember.
This says I believe Kristen stopped playing World of Warcraft because she started playing Pirates of the Burning Sea. A couple of years back. And it says, I wonder if Kristen has returned to World of Warcraft now that they've released a huge new world-changing expansion pack.
No, they've done that about three times. I go back and forth between World of Warcraft and Star Trek Online.
Okay, so you are back playing World of Warcraft?
Well, not currently.
Okay, but you...
I just moved. I don't have internet.
But you're back playing it again. Again, not that I care. I'm just... Here's the only reason I ask is because that game seems to have, not unlike EverQuest in an earlier generation, seems to have this, like... unholy grasp on people. I mean, just the hold that it wields over people is just astounding. And I've never really known anybody who didn't have some sort of a problem to just quit playing it.
I haven't played it since about April.
And so what was the... Now, did you just wake up one day and you're just like...
it's a horrible game.
I could be outside.
It's a beautifully done game, but like I could spend hours just exploring the world and everything. But as a game in general, it's just a bad game. The gameplay sucks. It's boring.
What do you see now? I don't really play. I don't play like role playing games or whatever.
It's like go kill 10 bears and bring back the pelts. Go kill 20 birds and okay, now you fight a boss. Maybe you can go raid when you get like level 70. But
is it like the South Park episode? Is it just where
it really
they're just
is.
You know where it's like guys, we need to kill 10,525 elf hawks and then we'll be able to and then that's and that really it just
it totally
seems,
is that
it the thing yeah it seems very much like you're just playing that. What is that thing? Is that skee ball? What is that thing? You know, where you're just there over and over and over, but you got to roll. And it doesn't even really matter. Like, you don't even have to hit the 100. You just have to roll the ball 1,000 times so you can get 10 tickets to get a slightly larger ball.
There was a story out about a year ago about this guy who sued Blizzard over World of Warcraft, saying that they purposely made his character run slower so he would have to log more hours into the game, thus charging him more money.
And that's, but it basically is the whole thing where you just have to go like fetch stuff and bring it back, basically, like you're some sort of a truffle hound, just so you can get points to buy stuff so you can go fetch things from different areas.
That's pretty much what it is.
All right. Okay. See, which is the reason that I, like, it just, and I think you and I have talked about this before, it just looks a lot like work.
You can illegally buy gold and armor and pay somebody in China to level you up.
Now, is that illegal? I mean, or against the laws, against the terms of service?
I mean, you're essentially stealing from the company, so yeah.
Well, but somebody had to work for that, right? I mean, it's like, somebody, if you buy it online, somebody had to put in the time.
Blizzard actually went around and sued a bunch of these companies that all they do is they hire people, you know, for like 30 cents an hour or whatever, 30 cents a month even, and they go around in these internet cafes and they earn gold. And then they transfer the gold to the people who buy it. And it's like $8 for like 500 pieces. Not that I would know anything.
Yeah, I saw this news thing about, there's like these little sort of sweatshops, these boiler rooms where they have like, you know, Chinese people sitting, you know, in cubicles and just act. And all they do all day is play World of Warcraft and level up and level up. And basically level up characters to the point where they're so powerful they can get money to sell them online.
And they exist all in all these games, too.
And farming all of the weapons and the swords and the things like that.
that, and then and all of the stuff is available for sale for actual money elsewhere, and people get like an hourly wage, and apparently by local Philippine or Chinese standards or whatever, fairly decent hourly wage.
There was a point where I actually was going to be doing that for a living.
Really?
Over the summer. Yeah.
What made you not do it?
It would have infringed on my radio career.
Well chosen. Way to go, Kristen.
They got sued and put out of business anyway, so Jesus. I think I made the right choice, Rick Emerson.
It's the weirdest world. We really do just live in the strangest freaking world. All right, let me just real quickly here. Let me call my wife, and I want to just so we can get this Settlers of Catan thing figured out.
Settled?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much. All right. Let's see if we can find this out, because I may have the story like completely wrong. And you said you don't have an Xbox, but you play the online Settlers of Catan. Now, is that against other people?
Yes.
Okay, it's not like against the computer or something.
Hello.
How are you, sweetie?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Hey, you're here with Don Taylor and Kristen Bowie and listener Sean, and speaking to jillions of enraptured ears. So let me ask you this. Let me ask you about Settlers of Catan. So please now to explain, tell me about whatever conflagration or kerfuffle you got into when you were playing Settlers of Catan online the other night, and what led up to it and what happened.
I feel like I'm going to be judged.
Well, yes.
I will not judge. I've played Settlers of Catan, and I know how angry it can make me, so I will not judge you.
I will judge. I'll judge and I'll mock, by
the
way.
No judging here.
Yeah, Kristen will be totally neutral. So this, and just to back up for a second, so if people haven't played this, so Settlers of Catan is a little bit like, it is sort of like a, I want to call it like Monopoly meets the farming game. You know, which may or may not be accurate.
Yeah, so it's a strategy game, but it also involves a certain amount of like cooperation and, with other players, because you are trading like resources so you can build things, even though simultaneously you are trying to beat them. So
it's like it's like Monopoly versus Magic the Gathering almost. Kind of. Anyway, like it's sort of card.
No, nothing like that.
Moving on. Okay. So it's you online against what, three other people?
Against three other people.
Okay.
I'm playing online, and I'm playing under your profile, so it's a male profile.
Thanks. I appreciate that. Were you wearing the headset, by the way, that came with the Xbox?
No, I was not.
Okay. So
I don't like to do the chatter and stuff.
All right. Now, can you...
But you can do, like, little emoticon things, and I might have been using a few of those. Like, there's, like, frowny faces when you're angry, or, like... You can throw fireballs at the other players.
I like how it goes right from frowny face to throwing a fireball.
There's no like middle gap.
No, there's
there.
No. The lines of demarcation there are abrupt. Now, can you, when you're playing Catan online, now, if you're not wearing the headset, can you like just type a message, with the little keypad thing? Or is it like some of the games where it has pre-selected messages from which you must choose?
You can't send any kind of text. Just the emoticons. The communication I had with this gentleman afterwards was an email that was sent through the Xbox system.
Okay, so let's start there. So how is it, what led, I mean, I almost don't want to know the answer to this, but is this the first time that you have then engaged in an email correspondence after the game with some Settlers of Catan foe?
I think it is, actually.
Okay,
I'm pretty sure of that.
What did he do to make you
angry?
What
led to this? Yeah, how did you get to this point?
Okay, so here's the thing. He initiated the email.
Sure.
Not me. But anyway, so I left the game a little bit early. I knew that I was losing, and it's a little bit bad etiquette to leave the game early, because then you end up, if you stay, you're playing with a computer player or two.
Hold on. Here's the thing.
That no judging
promise has immediately gone out the window here, because Dawn was just arching an eyebrow and looking at me knowingly. So really, when you say he started it.
Yeah, that's not a little bit bad etiquette. That's the one thing that is hugely bad etiquette.
So you actually did not even leave the game early. You ran like a small child. You tucked your virtual skirt between your knees and you fled. Like a girl.
Gosh, nothing causes nerd rage more.
The content of his email. He said in his email afterwards, "So you ran like a little girl out of the game. You should have stuck around to see me pummel you."
Now, when you say Let me just, okay. So when you say he said this to you in an email, this is like an actual email. This is like an in-game, is this like an Xbox message?
It's Xbox messages.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. Well, that is at least one step removed from you actually having like real email conversations, which would just imply like a level of dedication to an anger about the game that I think would be unhealthy for you. So, but let me understand this. So your whole thing, this is a totally different version of the story, by the way, than what I was given. When you told me this the other night and you sort of gave me the broad strokes of this, and I did that thing of like, no, don't tell me, because if we're going to talk about this, then it has to, you know, I'd have to save it for the show. But when you were giving me the lay of the land, you totally left out the fact that you the completely chickened out and fled the Kingdom of Catan.
I don't see it as the biggest, baddest etiquette mistake, because if you know you're going to lose, and you're like, so I.
What kind of American are you?
Yeah, but if you
too many like wheats and barleys, and you know, I should have gone with the logs and the bricks, and I didn't. And you know, it would have been like a lot more time spent chasing a dream that wasn't going to happen.
But the reason that it's such bad etiquette, though, is that if and this is one thing that I'm fine with, like pulling the ripcord on a game usually if you're just losing. But with Catan, if you leave early, the people who are still playing can't finish the game because you are gone. And like, I'm sure it's pretty much the same thing on Xbox as it is online. Then there's this like sort of 90-second thing where it waits in case the person got like disconnected
back.
Otherwise, you're just screwed.
It's different on Xbox. On Xbox, you play with like weird characters that is like.
Well, does the computer take over? And let me ask you this.
Yeah,
Is it sort of like, you know, because you can play a four-handed game of. Can you play just against the computer?
Yeah.
Okay.
So your person is taken up by like Genghis Khan or something.
So you can play a four-handed game of Catan with just you and the computer. But so you're saying that if somebody leaves an online game with four people, I think Dawn is looking this up online to see if you're actually telling the truth or not. So expect some sort of an excoriation here in just a moment.
It could be true, though. I don't play it on Xbox, so it could be taken over by a bot.
So you're saying if you bow out, that basically the computer kicks in an AI character to play.
Yes, I experienced this quite a bit. The bad etiquette part is that it is a computer, so it's not quite as fun.
Is the computer as good as playing? Is the computer as good as or worse as or as, you know, better than a person in terms of skill?
It's, you know, one time the computer won, but I've never had a computer person win before.
So that was going to be my question. Did you screw the other players by sticking them with some sort of AI that was just going to cream them, like, right out of the gate?
No. It's just not as much of a challenge as how I usually look at it.
Really? I guess we're getting sidetracked here. The bottom line is that he did, you know, in his email, you claim he was the instigator, but really he didn't point out anything that wasn't true. And he didn't really point out anything that I didn't say, like, 30 seconds ago.
He was taunting.
The line to me was, you ran off like a little girl. Okay, why didn't you say a little boy? I was a male character. That just rubbed me so wrong. So I had to email him back in my fit of...
Let me ask you this. Did you... Hold on a second. Yeah. Were you playing as Rick Emerson or as my... Because here's the thing, is I have the two Xbox names because, you know, because I get all this Catholic guilt about, you know, even like email messages I don't respond to. So if I go on as Rick Emerson, sometimes I'll get like a little like instant, you know, like, hey, dude... You know, I'm up. You're up. Let's kill zombies or whatever. And it's like sometimes I don't feel like I don't have time to answer those, and then I feel bad about it. So I will occasionally go on under this other Xbox name I have, just so that so I can play without taking time out to respond to people. That is a gender neutral name. The other one. Were you playing as Rick Emerson, which would just put this into a whole different category of discussion, like right away, or were you playing as the gender neutral name?
I was playing as the gender-neutral name, which has a male avatar with it.
Oh, okay. Well, so your thing is that it was a male avatar, but that he said you were running off like a little girl.
Yes.
Let me ask you this. Hold on. Let me just ask you. Did you at any point indicate that you were, in fact, a child?
What?
Did you? Well, in other words, the little girl thing. So there's a male avatar. But did you, like, because here's the other thing about Lara is that I don't – there at least once – I think on Halo 2, I believe you were online taunting a bunch of small boys by pretending to be a small girl. Do you remember this? Do you remember just
that was so many years ago?
You were like 30 something at that point, and you were in fact I think pretending to be a 12-year-old girl, and you were just like putting all this smack talk on like some 10-year-old boys, which is just disturbing, like in ways that I can't even begin to explain.
Years and years ago that was.
Uh huh. So. Did you give him this guy any reason to believe that he was playing against a young person?
Okay, not at the time, not during
not
the game.
Not at the time.
But then when he sent me that horrible email, I emailed him back and said, "You're right. I am a little girl. I'm 14. You know, playing under my dad's account. You know, what's your problem?" Or something to that effect. But I just, that's what I did.
Oh, for the love of God, let me understand this. So now, my Xbox Live account is being used for someone to pretend to be an underage girl communicating with an adult man somewhere. Just establish that before we go any further. Is that an accurate depiction of where we are at this point in my life?
Yes.
Okay. I guess I have no follow-up question, really.
Have fun with that, Rick.
Yeah, that's going to be great. So he said, "You ran away like a little girl," and you responded by saying, "I am a little girl," which is so creepy, by the way. Like, if I had done that, "I am a little boy. What's your name?" If you you said, "I am a little girl. I'm 14. Did he respond?
Yes, he did.
Oh, God. Do we even want to know what he said?
He said, "What are you wearing?"
Something about, like, you know, well, then that explains, you know, your sore loser behavior, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah.
Well, that's,
he
I guess...
responded, go ahead.
I was going to. That's actually bad news for you, by the way. That when you claimed to be a 14-year-old girl, that he decided that was perfectly in line with your actions and behavior.
Okay, shut up.
I'm just saying, like, you know. All right.
I am not getting a lot of emotional support from my Goomba.
No, it's true. It really is.
Yeah.
That's accurate. Okay. Is there anything else about the story that I have not heard that you know will eventually come out in some deposition or whatever?
Well, one more email was sent by me telling him again to, like, I don't know, F off or something. And then I did...
Or something.
Then I did
the... Well.
The block messages feature, so he could not email me back.
Oh, let me understand this. So you send a final taunting message, and then, again, like a child... As soon as you sent it, you hit the block button so that you wouldn't have to see whatever the big, mean adult's response was to you.
Okay, I know that this is all crazy. I told you this was like a crazy moment where Catan and random, like, troll kind of stuff, like, drove me mad. The really embarrassing thing, though, is
the
that
really
I'm
embarrassing
nerd.
Thing. I'm sorry, is the what?
That I'm a psych nurse, and that, like, I deal with people who do, like, little bad behavior all the time, and I think of the right thing to tell them, and I do it, like, in this sculpted way that, you know, positive reinforcement and negative reinforcement, and yet this is how I handled this little situation.
Yeah, I mean, you deal with
like,
people who are, like,
at night.
You deal with guys who are, like, strung out on meth and who are felons and stuff, and I mean, really, let me ask you this, just as one final sort of question here. Let's say that a patient of yours described engaging in this exact activity. If this scenario did not star you, my wife, but in fact starred a patient, what would you what would be your assessment, clinically speaking? How would you diagnose this person? What sort of behavior or personality defects would they have?
I am so not going to answer that question.
Here's the thing. There are other mental health professionals who listen. I could put the question to them if you'd prefer. I know people who work in your building.
No.
Would you say more of an antisocial personality disorder? More of a borderline behavior?
I would say it's poor coping skills. Poor coping skills.
Okay. All right. I really have no... Does anybody else have any... I don't see what I could possibly ask at this point.
I will say that I apologize for not supporting you on the etiquette thing, because once you explained that, you know,
sort of an AI, a bot thing comes in and takes over for you when you quit. It's not that terrible of an etiquette.
You know, but if here's the thing.
I mean, it is a breach of etiquette, but it's not as bad as if you were just leaving them all
hanging. Well, no, it doesn't hang
up. I'd still taunt them, though.
Well, yeah, that's still worthy of taunting.
It is cowardly and childlike. Have no illusions about that.
And honestly, I think the so you ran off like a little girl thing sounded kind of appropriate.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
Although, Don, you forget that he was speaking with a 14-year-old girl on my Xbox Live account. So, thanks. All right. That's swell.
Perhaps that's the first introduction to me on your new show.
Yes.
Hey, Laura.
Hi.
All right, then.
Bye now.
All right, bye now. Love you.
Love you.
Okay, bye. All right, there you go.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay. I will say this is just one final thing. While an AI does take over, and again, it doesn't hang up the game altogether, that does suck because, like, on Left 4 Dead, Left 4 Dead 2, which I've been playing, and again, and I've played online, you know, in multiplayer a couple times recently, just enough to find out that they added all this downloadable content, which now screws me because it's going to, like, keep me tethered to the game for even longer. But if you're playing online with three other people and one of them just bails, sometimes it'll go searching for a new player to slot in, somebody in the lobby. But if it can't, it gives you AI, and the AI sucks. The AI will totally get you killed. And it's like you really need that on a game like Left 4 Dead. But it sounds like it's the opposite in Catan.
Yeah, see, in Catan online, it does this thing where it just sort of sits for like 60 seconds or 90 seconds or something. Well, it gives a person a chance to get back online if they just got kicked off. But then if they don't come back, so you sit there for a minute and a half waiting for that, and then if they don't come back, it opens it up to anybody else who wants to come in and take over their seat. And if they were already, like, losing horribly...
Nobody
wants that. So a lot of times you end up just having to just walk away from the game
that
and nobody
sucks.
Wins.
I can't believe that they haven't figured out some sort of a workaround for that.
It's infuriating.
But in Lara's defense, haven't you guys ever succumbed to nerd rage on a video game? Really?
Oh, all the time.
Really? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
The best part's on Halo 3. I figured out a way. Okay, so you go into like a private party. Real quick. This is real quick. Okay, you go into a private party with your friend. You get put on opposite teams. Then you get one of the vehicles. Put one of you on the gunner. The other is the driver. And your team gets really confused because they see you driving and you're on their team. So they're like, oh, okay, that guy's taking care of stuff. Then they die.
Okay. I don't even know. This conversation has, I don't even know where we go from here. This is like killing all the Sims in the swimming pool.
Yes! Don't even get me started on that. Rick and I have already had that discussion.
I got
a lot of weird emails about that, by the way, going, you're crazy.
Are you the one who would put the Sims in the swimming pool and then take out the ladder and just watch them swim and then drown?
That, you know what else you can do? You can also build a wall around them and just wait as they sit there crying themselves because they keep, you know, urinating on themselves over and over again, and then eventually they starve to death and
the
die.
The Sims of Amontillado.
You can also plant a tree too close to the barbecue in the back, and when the guy uses the barbecue, he sets himself on fire and he dies and he comes back as a ghost.
Yes, yes. Or occasionally death will appear and you can bet with death for your life back.
Please do explain one more time the Halo 3 thing again, because I'm confused.
Okay, so in multiplayer, you're either on the red team or the blue team, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you go in there with a buddy, you can designate yourselves to be put on different teams, but you stay in a private chat party.
Right, yeah, got it.
Okay, then go get on one of the vehicles with your buddy on the opposite team and go shoot... Whoever's on the gun shoots the member of the opposite team because they see you driving and they're like, all right, I don't have to worry about that guy.
I miss the whole splitting up and being on separate teams thing.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. They get really upset. They also get upset if you loop commercials into the Xbox Live channel.
Apparently somebody here, said that we... says on the text box, we call that rage quitting, I guess is actually a term
that.
For that. Followed by... OMG, your wife is awesome. She's trying to Chris Hansen some guy on Xbox. Wow. That's great. Cheryl wants it known that she'll come visit me when I'm in prison. So
that's nice.
And the pedo bear says hello. Thank you. I appreciate that. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We should do this. We'll take a break. We'll come back with listener Sean, who has his top five modern Christmas songs around the corner. More with Kristen Bowie. And have we done both the what? We have not done Joy of Christmas yet.
Joy of Christmas. Sit
so
right
we'll
here.
Do Joy of Christmas as well. Stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Go nowhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Merry Christmas, baby. Shoot it. treatment night. Merry Christmas, baby. Studio treatment night. You bought me a diamond ring for Christmas. I feel like I'm in paradise. Music on my radio. Feel mighty fine, girl. I got music on my radio. Oh, oh, oh. I feel like I'm gonna kiss you standing beneath that mistletoe. Santa came down the chimney, half past three, y'all. Let my good old present for my baby and for me. Merry Christmas, baby. Should it treat me nice? You bought all those good old presents. I love you, baby. Rest of my life. Merry Christmas, girl. Merry, merry, merry Christmas, baby. Should it treat me nice? Merry Christmas, baby. I said you should it treat me nice. You bought me all lovely things, yeah. I feel like I'm in paradise. I wish you a merry Christmas, baby.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964 here in just a moment. Listener Sean will join us in the studio, and we'll get today's top five. The top five modern Christmas songs. It's the top five modern Christmas songs coming up this Friday. Our Christmas Eve show featuring Ebenezer, I Barely Knew Her, the encore of our radio play. We'll also have our annual performance broadcast of Behind the Christmas and Tim Riley's Frank Sinatra Christmas special. That is all coming up this Friday, Christmas Eve, right here at the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Be sure to join us tomorrow when our guests will include Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. Friday, Big Jim Willig will be here. He'll also be doing another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. And between the two is Thursday, when Anna Griffin from The Oregonian will be. It's the greatest moment where I looked over and it's like everybody is tandem texting or whatever on their the phone. Do you have an iPhone, Kristen?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let's Kristen Bowie.
Oh, hello.
You are you. What is it? What phone do you have over there?
It's the MyTouch.
Now what is?
It's an Android phone.
Okay. Now what? I thought you were a big Apple nerd.
No. No.
Sorry. Jesus. Like I said, you were Canadian or something.
No. It's kind of the equivalent there.
I was under the impression that you were an Apple enthusiast. Mm-hmm. I only say that because there was a couple of Christmases ago, I was in Utah and I was trying to do something remotely with the automation system and I couldn't quite get it to work. And you mockingly texted me. You said this wouldn't happen if you were using a Mac. And so I've always assumed that you were an Apple person.
Oh, no, I was just being snarky.
OK, that's what you do. All right. The MyTouch. How do you feel about that phone?
Well, currently the back of it's taped on.
Okay. You don't have such good luck with phones.
Well, in general, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why? Do you subconsciously dislike them and want to destroy them?
I guess so. That one's been through the Clackamas River.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's great. You and phones and water should all be kept in different areas.
Yeah.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. Still to come, we've got your joy of Christmas. Mm-hmm. And again, we'll get to the top five here in just a moment. So welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. Listener Sean, who's been, by the way, is sitting in the back of the studio as I ran colossally, amazingly, astoundingly overtime today. Hello, sir.
Hello.
How are you, my friend?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I don't know how much of the last conversation you were able to glean there, how much you were able to hear of my my wife, but if you should see anything in the news in the next few days about Rick Emerson and his Xbox Live account, you just don't pay that. No, never mind.
I won't go near it.
So tell me a little bit about the top five we're going to hear today. So these are what was the motivation for creating this list?
There was no motivation when I found out I could do this. I was going to be able to come on. I came up with two lists. One was more of the classic Christmas songs from my childhood. And then I put together one was more, you know, stuff from my adult life. So it came down to a flip of the coin, I guess.
And so you had either standards or sort of, you know, updated versions, so, you know, contemporary songs. We're going to go with the contemporary songs. We should also note, by the way, now, correct me if I'm wrong on something. You are or are not the creator of, I don't even like to say the word out loud. You are or are not the man behind the Rick Pig Baby.
I won't take full credit, but
you were one of the instigators of.
I designed the Rick Pig Baby.
The amazing Rick Pig Baby.
All right.
Yes.
So, which is a thing, by the way, that Dawn asked me about at one point. I think you'd been here, I don't know, however many weeks. And you were like, what's this Rick Pig Baby thing I keep seeing in the text box and email and online?
I looked it up online and I saw pictures and it was disturbing.
Please to explain to those who may not know exactly what the Rick Pig Baby is, sir.
Well, it goes back to the Emerson Roast. You had the contest to design for the posters, and I've been, you know, in contact with listener Kara and a couple other people, Tom Sutton, Carolyn Tucson, and Kara came up with the idea, and I just put it all together.
When you say the idea, this is my face and the body of a baby and the body of, I believe, a suckling pig. Whoa. Merged together.
Something that involved a pig getting roasted.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the final I mean, have you seen the actual
picture? Yeah, it's like a baby on a platter like a suckling pig with your head on the yeah, there it is.
So did you participate in the
oh, God, it's on a
of the Rick
shirt.
Pig Baby?
He's wearing a Rick Pig Baby shirt.
Were you part of that?
Part of what?
When they put up the flyers for the roast? With the Rick Pig Baby on it?
I know who did that, and I won't reveal that name.
Well, I don't want to know who did it. Yeah. I just wanted to know if you were part.
I would have, but I didn't know where the studio was.
Oh, okay. So.
There was apparently at some point there was a wallpapering of the front and back parking lots, and I believe a substantial number of trees all the way down the street on front. You know, that just said the Rick Emerson Roast or Rick Emerson Show or something with like the Rick Pig Baby, and there was like 7,000 of them.
Yeah. I think Dave Zinn turned into a black hole that day.
Oh God! And it was like that was one of those things where Dave comes. Rick, your listeners are really devoted, and I admire that. But I could you ask them not to put up pictures of you as a pig all up and down the parking lot where management is going to see them? Thank you very much. And he just sort of like vanished like back to the front desk. But in the back parking lot, I swear to God, there were probably 500. Somebody run a 500 copies of
it
this.
It was pretty glorious.
Yeah, this flyer advertising the roles with like the Rick Pig Baby thing in the middle of it. And they were everywhere. They were everywhere. They were on like every surface, every flat space, front lot, back lot, I think. And again, it's all the way up and down the road. And so, you know, if there are any surveillance films or whatever that time, you'll see me out there going like, yeah, take them off of you. It was kind of it's a thing that in retrospect I see now as awesome and glorious, you know, and as a mark of these sometimes disturbingly intense devotion of the audience, which is great. I think at that exact moment in time, I don't think I viewed it quite the same way. I think I lived in fear of Dave McDonald, who was our general manager, I believe, at that point, is driving his Mercedes, you know, his big black firing car into the parking lot and then just seeing my face on a baby's body everywhere and then just deciding he no longer wanted to employ any of us. That did not happen until sometime later, and it was an unrelated event. But so you're now wearing that on a shirt.
We wore these to the roast.
Oh, I know.
There was a whole bunch of them. Yeah, you know.
Oh, I've seen it. Here's the thing is I know. that so whenever I die, whether it's next month or whether it's 50 years from now, there's going to be some reporter somewhere, you know, like in Kennewick, if nowhere else, who just goes like, you know, well, you know, local has been dies, and he'll go to a Google image search, and that's the only thing that's going to come up. And journalistic standards will have lessened. They will have gotten even more lax, and they'll just run that alongside my obituary, which is sort of great. So you've taken your first step into immortality, sir.
Well, you know, I didn't plan on it to last. I thought after it took third place in the contest, it would go away, but I just couldn't stop designing things. So I think currently the Facebook page has the Rick Pig Baby Christmas picture. So.
Okay.
Sorry.
It's a Rick Pig Baby Christmas.
Of course it is.
We have one for each holiday.
All right. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Show. Thank you for joining us. Let's pay a visit to the news desk with Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
So I have a news story here that was sent to us, sent to me specifically by alert listener Dallas. A drunken early morning fight between a New Mexico woman and her daughter-in-law ended Sunday when the older combatant tore the nipple off of one of her relative's breasts. Prosecutors will weigh aggravated assault charges against Amelia Ovide, 46, in connection with her December 12th confrontation with Marie Cadney, 30, the wife of Ovide's son, 26-year-old Jason Cadney.
Jesus.
A Las Cruces Police Department report notes that the Cadneys and Ovide had been drinking most of the night when Marie Cadney told the cops a 3 a.m. argument between her husband and his mother became very intense. Cadney said she went to stand between them and try to separate them, although she also began arguing with her mother-in-law. Ovide, a convicted felon who has spent time in prison for narcotics possession, grabbed her right breast and began to squeeze and pull on her nipple.
Jesus God.
Cadney added that she yelled for Ovide to let go, and she continued to pull at that time. Ovide let go only after Cadney began punching her in the face. Cadney was interviewed by investigators at the medical center after a doctor had performed a reattachment procedure. After Cadney had physically removed her mother-in-law from the apartment, she felt fluid on her right breast and noticed there was blood on her shirt. When she untucked her shirt, she stated that her nipple fell on the floor.
Oh my God almighty.
She said she picked it up, put it in a bag, securing it, and yet still waited 2 hours before she decided she needed to go to the hospital.
Did she think it would just regenerate somehow, or just that, you know?
I don't know.
It's not like pulling a Dixie cup out of that dispenser at work. It's not like another one just pops out.
And how much sheer force would you have to use to tear off of a nipple?
Also, one has to ask at this point exactly what... Sorry, Cheryl. What is the size of nipple we're talking about here? Because you can't... I mean, getting a handhold on a nipple is...
Yeah.
You know, unless you're a baby, that seems like it's, you know, unless you've got real tiny hands or that's an elongated nipple.
They seem like they're firmly attached, though.
Yeah. I guess you could rip off pretty much anything if you pull hard enough.
With enough force, one...
It's like I'm not a Mr. Potato Head. Jesus.
One Cadney told officers she was not sure she wanted to pursue charges. Prosecutors still have the discretion to file a felony case against Ovide. A deputy district attorney told the Las Cruces Sun News that this was apparently the first time that a Las Cruces resident has suffered a body part being torn off during a crime.
I've got this, like, sympathetic nipple pain going on right here. I guess it is, as you know, Da Vinci once said, with a large enough lever, I can move the world. I suppose with enough force, really any part of your body can be detached. Good God almighty.
And, of course, thank you to our listeners for reading this and thinking of me.
The fact that it, like, fell out of her shirt.
That it fell on the floor.
Yeah.
That's
just
the
plopped
worst.
Out.
Uh-huh. Or, don't, you know, and it's just kind of a looking down and just sort of a...
I wonder what sound a nipple would make hitting the floor.
I don't know. I'm at...
Well, there you have it.
Okay.
I think that's an accurate assumption there, Dawn Taylor.
Thank you.
Maybe we should call Alpha and ask if they're still interested in that great radio show that they felt was going to be such a hit with the vast swath of Portland listeners that they envisioned. This is a specialized kind of broadcast, is the thing. That's really what no one ever understood over the years. It's a specific taste that is served by this radio program. What was that sound again, Dawn? Okay, thanks. All right, here's Dawn Taylor.
We have a little Joy of Christmas update here.
Don't see how the show could get any more joyful, but okay. Here's your Joy of Christmas for Tuesday right here on the Rick Emerson Radio program.
Wish you a Merry Christmas. Wish you a Merry Christmas.
Here's Don Taylor.
A man dressed in a Santa Claus suit and armed with a gun robbed an East robbed the East Providence, Rhode Island Yacht Club on Sunday night. Lieutenant Raymond Blinn said the robbery happened about 7 p.m. A bartender had been getting the bar. Oh, there we go. A bartender had been getting the bar at the Yacht Club ready for the evening when a man described as large and wearing a Santa hat, white beard, a red Santa suit jacket, and jeans walked in and produced a shotgun or rifle-type gun from his Santa bag. The bartender fled through the bar entrance and escaped to a nearby establishment. Police said an undetermined amount of cash was missing from the bar register when police arrived.
You know, you got to imagine that there's any, I mean, that has got to be one of the most frequently used costumes, you know, for robberies of any kind, period, ever. Yeah. I mean, if you were to look at the year as a sum total, the Santa suit is the only, because even at Halloween, I mean, it's like, I don't know, at Halloween there isn't such uniformity of appearance, but at Christmas, any number of guys on the street are dressed as Santa.
It kind of takes the edge off of the robbery.
And you... Yes, and you could, but you can also, but it's like it's much easier to blend into a crowd. You know, you rob a bank, you walk out onto the street, depending on what part of town you're in and when you plan it, and there's immediately like 15 Santas there.
And it's also, I think it's because it's such an iconic suit, too. You see Santa. I think it's the same thing as if somebody's wearing a clown suit to commit a robbery. I think it, honestly, it must make it psychologically harder for you to identify the person you saw later.
Right.
Because you're going, clown! You know, or it was Santa! You know, I don't know what he looked like. It was Santa.
Right, because that's the thing, is because it's been, the image has been imprinted on your brain so many thousands of times in a particular manner.
You just automatically see the Coca-Cola Santa.
That's what I was going to say, because the Coca-Cola company has imprinted the bowl full of jelly, you know, Santa on your you know, on your frontal lobe, and that's all you can ever come up with. All right, well done.
Joy of Christmas, part the two. As the four-alarm fire raged at the Provo Tabernacle, firefighters and those watching helplessly from the sidewalk observed something truly remarkable. Some are calling it a Christmas miracle. A painting of Jesus Christ burned in the fire, save for the image of the Son of God, which was left unscathed. There are fascinating things in this world, said Lynn Schofield, the Provo fire marshal. News cameras captured the painting inside the building, the Burning Tabernacle on Friday night. The image, Harry Anderson's Second Coming, is scorched except for Christ's image, which is untouched and surrounded by charred blackness. Utah Congressman Jason Chaffetz took a photograph of it while touring the rubble on Saturday morning.
It must be really nice to be able to see any glass as half full, no matter, I mean, no matter what, because it sounds from the story, unless I'm missing something, that like 99.999% of the church is gone.
Oh, yeah.
They just burned to the ground.
Yeah, it's like this beautiful historic building, and
but there's a fraction of it remaining.
It burned for 2 days, starting on Friday morning. It's gone.
Yeah.
It's dead. That church is no more. It's an ex-church. About 250 people were at the tabernacle the night before as part of a Christmas concert. So they're trying to figure out, you know, why it burned down. Somebody who walked by the tabernacle Monday morning says, it's a Christmas miracle,
you know,
that one painting was unscathed.
I think having religious faith is just like having some sort of an emotional flak jacket, you know, where it doesn't, it just, nothing can, you know, it doesn't matter how much damage you sustain. I mean, it'll bruise ribs. It's going to hurt. It's not going to feel all that great, but nothing will actually be able to penetrate it. You are impervious in every way. How many parts are there, by the way, in today's Joy of Christmas?
Three.
Okay. Here is part the third.
Residents along Laurillard Avenue in Union Beach, New Jersey, are in the holiday spirit, but not enough to deal with the 6-foot mechanical singing Santa that one resident put on display. Jill Patella said she put up the singing Santa because it was the last gift she got from her husband, who died 3 years ago. This year was the time, she said, he would have wanted me to live life again. Meanwhile, her neighbors are growing angrier by the hour. Neighbor Mark Dittman said, it's literally 12 to 13 hours a day. There's no consideration for the neighbors. We're very into the Christmas spirit, but this is ridiculous.
So what does it do? What is it? I mean, does it give any explanation as to the song it plays?
Well, no, but it's a 6-foot mechanical singing Santa. So, you know, it probably moves and sings.
And sways a little bit.
It does like that weird hip shimmy that the ones
with the Christmas tree.
Totally what I'm thinking about.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about the dancing Santa is it makes you wonder, like, if it was originally, if the endoskeleton of that was originally designed for something else, because it is a strangely sexualized kind of twist that Santa does.
Or like the gopher in Caddyshack.
Don't you wonder maybe if that was the thing? If Santa is the Trans-Siberian Orchestra to the gopher's sabotage, where they were trying to do They were trying to do one project that fell through, and it's like they have this offshoot, though, like out of desperation that became the big moneymaker. Like, they were trying to do The Gopher, and then they got told they could, like Warner Brothers or whoever said, like, no. And
they like, go, they just had the stock parts lying around,
yeah,
so they repurposed it?
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, the insides, the guts of it is what's difficult to put together. But then all you got to do is just get, like, a Santa doll and just, like, you know, pull out the cotton and stick it over the top, and there you go, dancing.
They were originally
thing.
Supposed to be, like, hula girls.
Yeah.
But the hula girl market fell through, so they said, put it in a Santa suit.
Mass-produced Elvi or something.
Yeah.
And it makes you wonder if that is the same company. Like, because all of these things sort of emerged at the same time. There was the dancing Santa. There was the dancing Coke can. There's that dancing Daisy with the sunglasses on.
Remember the gophers?
The one that would listen to the radio and kind of, like, jerk around.
Yes. And then there's the Billy Bass that sort of flops around and sings Don't Worry, Be Happy or Take Me to the River.
And about 6 years ago, there were gophers. It was gophers everywhere. Like gophers that sang Kung Fu Fighting, gophers that sang David Cassidy songs. They were little gophers, and you wound them up and they did things. And I have, at home somewhere, I have, like, two gophers. They're dueling banjos gophers, which always cracked me every time. I found it hilarious because you turn and one would go, dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee, and the other go, dee-dee-dee-dee. And then they'd play together. And for some reason, I found that hilarious every single time.
I haven't seen
a gopher, a singing gopher in years.
My mother-in-law, I think 2-3 years in a row for Christmas, like, go figure. And I think they were all at the AM 970 studios. I think we may have just, sorry, honey, thrown them away when we moved. But they were stuffed animals that either sang or danced or both. One of them was an obviously stoned Easter Bunny, by the way. It was a plush Easter Bunny doll who was green, who had, like, a bling-style egg around his neck on, like a big,
and
gaudy chain.
He did that bunny wrap. I remember that
he
thing.
He did this horrible thing called the Easter Bunny wrap, and you just got to picture some sad, sad performer in the studio in front of a microphone hanging his head, just planning on taking huge amounts of drugs when he gets home to blot out the horrible day that he had to go into a recording studio and voice do the voice of the rapping Easter Bunny. And the Easter Bunny's eyes were, like, half-lidded. They were, like, stitched at, like, half-mast, so you knew he was just completely high. That was followed the next year by a pig that looked like a gay biker. He was a pig that had, like, the village people, like the biker man, the leather man hat on, and, like, a leather vest. And then he sang Born to be Wild. And it was something after that. It was like a Johnny Cash singing something or other the year after that. So it's up. And then that prompts these two thoughts. Here's two things that you can market. I've been saying for years that somebody who specializes in, like, tasteless or edgy toys, they ought to market sort of like a baby shake me. And it's sort of a reverse baby that cries, and then you just have to shake it to keep it quiet. And I'm just saying, no, not to sell that Kristen's looking horrified, not to sell to children, but I mean just to sell to adults who like horrible, off-putting gag gifts. You know what I mean? Like, it's just a different time. You know, it's like using rubber vomit no longer cuts it.
And you think that good people have things wrong with them.
I'm saying.
And if that was really successful, you could have, like, baby SIDS, and it only stops crying when you turn it face down in the crib.
I like that one.
See, that's too much, Dawn. Why do you have to bring darkness to the show? You have the baby shake me again, just because it's not something I would buy. I'm just saying, in a morally agnostic sense, I know what Americans, I know how the American mind works. I know what people will.
They'd sell it at, like, Spencer's or something.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I know what people will spend money on. Speaking of which, don't forget, the Rick Emerson radio program makes a fine gift this holiday season.
Does.
For the low, low cost of just 32 cents a day, even less if you're buying an annual subscription, you too can give the gift of laughter and amusement and occasionally off-putting humor to a friend or loved one. Find out more at rickemerson.com. At Spencer's Gifts, you could have Don's idea for a doll, you could have the baby shake me, and then there could be like an Epi Annie kind of a doll that stands up and then occasionally, like if you shine a flashlight on it, just falls down and just jerks a lot on the floor. Seizing Sally. I got nothing.
See, and you said Epi Annie, and I was thinking of the EpiPen, which is the epinephrine. So I was thinking it would be a doll that, like
an operation.
You'd
game.
Feed it a peanut, and it would swell up, and then you had to poke it with the pen.
That's a great idea. See, I'm telling you right now, these are all geniuses. Money in the bank. Merry Christmas, everyone. There's your.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas.
By the way, somebody wants it known that whoever this is says, I wore my Rick Pig Baby t-shirt to an interview for a job I didn't want. It worked. All hail the Rick Pig Baby. All right. That's fantastic. Let's do one more here, and then we'll roll today's top five. Here is Don. Christy.
I didn't know he'd be doing another one. I wasn't prepared. A Mississippi truck driver arrested in Antrim Township, Mississippi, on Monday morning was arrested after a pursuit through three states that he was allegedly driving his rig under the influence of methamphetamine. After wrecking the tractor trailer on Interstate 81, the driver resisted arrest and was subdued with a taser and a police dog. Well, I guess this was a taser. Would have been a taser.
That's okay.
Thomas L. McNeil, 42, is charged with 17 crimes and traffic violations in Pennsylvania. He was arraigned Monday afternoon and is being held in lieu of $250,000 bail. Police brought McNeil to Cunningham to the office in restraints. The trucker wore a battered pair of cowboy boots, a heavy winter jacket and blue jeans, and spoke with a thick southern accent. When police took him into custody following the chase on Interstate 81, McNeil was reportedly disoriented, telling officers he thought it was Wednesday and that he was in Georgia. According to police, troopers were dispatched shortly before 9 a.m. to the state line to intercept the purple 1998 Freightliner pulling a white trailer and being pursued by Maryland State Police. The rig was allegedly involved in, quote, numerous hit and runs in Maryland and West Virginia. No injuries were reported in any of three states. When the rig crossed into Pennsylvania, it was being pursued by numerous marked and unmarked police cars from Maryland and West Virginia. A trooper deployed stop sticks on the highway at the border and the truck hit them. The truck continued north after crossing the border with about 15 police vehicles following it. As the pursuit continued, the truck began to weave all over the roadway and drove onto the median three times.
This, by the way, this story coupled with the movie Duel are the reasons why I am extremely courteous and polite to truck drivers. It's the same reason I'm courteous and polite to cops, because you just never know when one of them is having a bad day and decides to take you out of some sort of collateral damage.
Yeah. It never doesn't explain why. I mean, granted, he was under the influence of methamphetamine, but it doesn't say, you know, what started the whole thing when he just decided to just keep running away from cops through three different states, crashing into things and hitting cars and driving over the median.
Yeah, I think the answer might be in the question there, though, when you talk about the why the guy on methamphetamine decided to do anything. It seems like that's methamphetamine seems to be a bit of that's like an emotional magic eight ball, you know? But it's just like all of the responses that come up are punch, you know, or just, you know.
And the perfect thing to add to that is, of course, a semi-truck.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Don't forget this holiday season to do your shopping at, among other places, ThinkGeek.com. You go to ThinkGeek.com. You use the special Christmas code, which is Emerson Xmas. That is all one word, EmersonXmas, Emerson Xmas. And that gets you, I believe, 10 off 50 or more. I could be ever so slightly off on that amount, but I do believe it is, I believe it is 10 off 50 or more. So that is Emerson Xmas. Okay, we've had it clarified by Cheryl. Yeah, that is $10 off $50 or more in purchases. The code is Emerson Xmas, and that's at ThinkGeek.com. That is all the way up until midnight on Christmas Day. So till 11:59 p.m. on Christmas. ThinkGeek.com. The code is Emerson Xmas.
And even if you don't need a present for somebody else, buy something for yourself because they have great stuff.
That's right. And I mean, really, if you find yourself with with credit, free money, free time, free whatever, you know, Dawn Taylor could always use the. Was it you that wanted the All Edges brownie pan?
I do want the, but I don't want to spend like however much money it costs because it's, again, it's
absurdly expensive.
It's a unitasker.
Yeah. Well, no, and that's the thing. And like, don't get me wrong, I love ThinkGeek, but that's one of those things where. That's one of those things where it is like so expensive that you really – it doesn't make sense for anybody who is not like a massive brownie enthusiast.
Yeah, if I was going to spend like $20 or $30 on something from ThinkGeek, and I think this actually costs a lot less, what I want is I want the little coffee cup warmer thing that plugs into your USB port.
Totally.
I totally want one of those.
They've also got – have you seen that thing they sell, the USB hand warmer? So it's like it's like little hand warmers that go inside your gloves, like REI cells. But instead of a chemical reaction, it charges with your USB port. Also, let me just say this. Oh my God! The other thing they sell is this. It's like a blanket. You know, it's like a throw blanket, or you know, like a blanket you would sit underneath on the couch. But the blanket, it's an electric blanket powered by USB.
And so great.
And they show, and it's like you say to yourself, my God, who would ever need such a thing? Well, then they show you the answer in the photograph, where they show some nerd on the couch just relaxing and just sort of lounging with a cup of cocoa, and then in front of him, his laptop.
Yeah.
And then he is staying dry and snug and warm, you know, underneath the blanket, which is being powered by the USB port of the laptop. It's just fantastic.
Because my
further taking away any reason for any MMO player to leave the house.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. You never need to move again.
Well, my workplace of choice in my home is, I do have my office, but I also have like the big comfy chair in the living room, and then I sit there in the big comfy chair with my feet on the coffee table with my laptop on my knees, and like, yeah, the electric blankety thing plugged in, that would be awesome.
It would be sweet. Here is your top five for Tuesday, December 21st, on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
Three, two, one, go. fire.
Counting is wonderful, counting is marvelous, counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness, counting is ecstasy, I love to count, don't you?
Here is your top five for Tuesday, December 21st, 2010. Listener Sean, creator, mastermind, overlord, maven of the Rick Pig Baby, here with the top five contemporary Christmas songs. And now these, are these in your opinion, or are you trying to make a sort of objective assessment of the musical landscape?
This is my opinion.
Okay, excellent. So I'll start with track one here, and if I'm going in the wrong order, let me know, and I'll start at the end.
Well,
but I'll start with track number one.
Okay, because I have 1 through 5 and then honorary mention. So am I not going five to one?
No. You just do it the way you always do it. I'm talking about the CD. These are on a CD as opposed to being in digital cuts. And so like with Ryan White yesterday, when people give me a CD of 6 cuts, sometimes I'm supposed to start at the back and work up. You know?
Gotcha.
So you just don't pay me, no, never mind.
I won't worry my pretty little head
about
it.
That's right. You just deal with the looking pretty and the not sounding
too smart. Don't act
too smart. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
All right. Here is your honorable mention. What is that?
Honorable mention is Southern Culture on the Skids, Merry Christmas Baby.
All right. And wait for it. Wait. Any moment. Wait. Oh.
I'm very pleased to see this list, though, by the way, because I like all of these songs, and that rarely happens with a top five list.
Excellent.
If we ever get to listen to any.
It's the whole thing, right? I think I...
That's it.
All right. Here we go. All right. There was that pesky play button that I didn't.
It's kind of like when we were trying to start Legion of News this morning, and it was like you kept turning the key, and the show just wouldn't turn over.
Yes.
Minor details, you know, play buttons.
So I don't actually. Okay, so this is great because this is actually. I love this song. In fact, the Otis Redding version of the song, which we played not too long ago, actually today, is one of my. Very nearly my favorite Christmas recording of all time. I love the song Merry right. Christmas Baby. Now this is Southern Culture and the Skids.
Yes.
I don't know a lot about these guys.
They're wonderful.
They are one of my favorite bands. I've seen them live more than any other band.
So I don't know if this is representative of their sound. I mean, it's a Christmas song, obviously, but I don't know does their most of their music kind of sound like this or
a little bit. They have some more up-tempo stuff. Too Much Pork for Just One Fork. My House Has Wheels.
Awesome.
You know.
So you've seen them live several times. Are they great?
8 or 9 times. Yeah.
Is it, as the name implies, is it a sort of Southern rock kind of?
It's a trailer park party. You know, they're throwing fried chicken at you during the show. And
you're speaking my language,
yeah,
sir.
It's fantastic.
I mean, it's like Ryan White from the Oregonian was here yesterday, and he and I have discussed this before, that we've had to for ourselves, for our own top fives, we've had to make a sort of like only one drive-by truckers song per month rule, because otherwise it would just all be that. So, yeah,
right.
I mean, a sort of Southern rock or Southern style rock done really well is just one of life's true pleasures. That is one of the, and it's a thing that's, you know, a lot of, it's like, you know, like a lot of forms of music, people think that it's simplistic or easy to do, but it's easy to screw up. It's easy to do it wrong. Great sound. I love the production on this.
Santa come down a chimney about 3:30. Left all them a good old presents for my baby and me.
Yes.
Merry Christmas.
Now, is the female singer there, is she a standard part of the group?
She's the bass player.
Man, if you get that interplay between the male and female vocals, especially if they're doing almost like a co-lead thing.
Yeah. She does lead the vocals on a lot of their tracks.
Ah, it's fantastic. Yeah. I have to make a note to...
And she has fantastic wigs.
Excellent. Listener Sean is here with his top five contemporary Christmas songs of all time. Don Taylor, what is number five?
Number five is my imaginary musical boyfriend, Henry Rollins, with 'Twas the Night Before Christmas.
All right, please to explain.
I don't know how to explain Henry Rollins.
I don't think I've ever even heard of this.
This is the darkest thing I've ever heard.
He supersedes explanation, Rick.
Not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care. That Saint Nicholas soon would be there.
It couldn't be any gloomier.
Now, is it just a straightforward, I mean, such as it is, reading of the poem?
Pretty much.
Kind of seems like he wants to tear your head off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
to see what was the matter. Away to the window, I flew like a flash. Tore open the shutters and threw up the sash.
It either says something great or terrible about us that we hear gunfire and our first response is peals of laughter.
Then to my wandering eyes should appear, and there's your sleigh.
This is so weird. This is like that,
This is Christmas in L.A.
It's like that thing that Lou Reed did a couple years ago where he was reading, where Lou Reed was reading The Raven. And it was just like Lou Reed with these like squeals of guitar feedback in the background, you know, just reading Edgar Allan Poe poems.
Have you seen Rollins live?
I've seen his spoken gigs several times. I've seen him do spoken for probably 5 or 6 times. I've never seen the Rollins band live. His music kind of leaves me cold. I don't really cotton to Henry Rollins. Like, I'm not... I recognize the importance of Black Flag and how crucial they are in what a crucial link they are in the punk chain, and he obviously, you know, you can't question his devotion to music. He lives for it and all of that. It's just, but it's not my deal.
I've never seen him live before. I'd never even heard of him, and then I saw him at the first Lollapalooza, and Rollins band came out. And just blew my mind.
My thing. I need a little bit more melody in my punk. But that being said, I mean, he obviously, again, he's, you know, you can't overstate his importance musically. And then the first time I saw him do spoken word, it just like took my brain apart. Yeah. I mean, it was just unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, just made me feel like such a freaking hack.
He's a genius.
He also has Henry Rollins. He said one of the great things to me. One of the best things I've ever heard. I've interviewed him, I think, twice, and you know, he's such a workaholic where he has the band, the spoken word thing, the publishing company. You know, he does books, he does tours for those things, he does USO shows. Military guys love him, so he's always overseas doing those. And I asked him one time, I'm like, you're doing all this stuff. I'm like, when do you sleep? Like, how do you know? Do you ever want to relax? And he said something that really resonated. He said that he felt like he was the guy that when he was born, he just got a timer strapped to the side of his head, and it's counting down from a number that is unknown to him, and so he's just not going to waste a second of it. And that just made such an impact on me.
And he returns emails
within like 20 minutes, which is insane. Wow. Well done. Okay, then. These are listener Sean's top 5 contemporary Christmas recordings of all time. Dawn Taylor, number 4.
Number 4, XTC, a.k.a. the Three Wise Men. Thanks for Christmas.
You have picked Tim Riley's favorite Christmas recording of all time, by
nice.
The way. I love this song. Great song.
Just try being sad. You can't.
You know, and here's the thing about it is that it's like that whole, it's the whole like hooker with a heart of gold thing. When people who have a sort of musicians, especially in this case, who have a kind of a cynical or hardened exterior, or most of their music deals, you know, it deals in sort of, you know, the very sort of spikier, edgier, confrontational areas like Andy Partridge does. It makes it, and then when they do a song like this that is obviously heartfelt, that is, you know, this isn't like a marketing ploy or something. It isn't like Andy Partridge thought XTC was going to suddenly start selling millions of records. It just has a lot more impact when you hear something legitimately charming from a guy like Andy Partridge, who can be so unbelievably caustic in his lyrics. And plus, here's the other thing, is that original Christmas songs that are good are hard to do. That's why everybody just does standards, you know? That's everybody sings Silent Night for the billionth time.
My brother.
Well, I mean, it's very easy. Sorry. Okay. It's very easy to fall back on the Mariah Carey and become horrible.
Right.
It's very easy to do.
Yeah. My brother and I decided a few years ago we were going to try and record a CD of original songs for our family for gifts. I think we got about 20 minutes into it and just gave up.
Yeah. I mean, it's done. You know, writing an original pop song, you know, a song that's catchy and a song that succeeds on its own, you know, melodic and musical merits is difficult anyway. But then if you have to make it Christmas themed, and if it's going to try to stand out from the billion other things that are out there. And a mark of how hard it is to do is that so few people do it, even when that would, you know, make them more money. Because it's like, you know, you're doing Silent Night, which is in the public domain, so you're not making any money on that, really. But, you know, so when somebody really goes out of their way to create an original Christmas work and it succeeds like this, and that production is so beautiful. It just has the most crystalline sound to it.
Here's a question for you. What was the last original Christmas song released that you can remember? Because they really don't exist anymore.
Not counting things that are sort of inherently comedic, like any of the South Park stuff. I mean, if you're going to sort of take flat-out novelty compositions out of it, the last straightforward original Christmas song that made an impact... I don't know, Don?
At least late 90s.
I mean,
that's the earliest I could think of one.
I mean, yeah, there's this. There's Thank God It's Christmas by Queen, which is in the 80s somewhere. God, I don't know.
I have no idea.
I really can't. I mean, they're few and far between.
Yeah.
Too many. I mean, it's mainly pop artists just doing the same old, you know, the first Noel,
right.
Blah, 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 blah. There's really no original Christmas songs anymore.
It is hard to do.
I heard a song this weekend on the radio. I was listening to Dee Snider's House of Hair, and he played Enough is Enough, a song called Happy Holidays. And I don't know if that's original or not, but it's still stuck in my head.
Is it a new recording, or is it a...
It was recorded in 08.
Interesting.
Yeah, on a compilation.
Huh. Enough's Enough. Boy, it's a name I haven't heard for a while. Did you go see Enough's Enough when they were in town a couple years ago?
I did not. No, I didn't have the heart.
Oh, man. No, it was... Here's... I don't have time to tell the story. One of these days, I'll tell the story about seeing Enough's Enough a couple years ago at Outlaws. It was like a great and terrible experience all at once.
Was that the Bullet Boys show?
It was. The Bullet Boys. It was Enough's Enough, the Bullet Boys, and L.A. Guns. And I think Brittany Fox was in there somewhere. These are listener Sean's top five contemporary Christmas songs. Don Taylor?
Number 3, Run DMC, Christmas in Hollis.
It's not Christmas without this.
It really is. This is probably, I mean, this is probably the most, if you exclude goddamn Grandma's Got Run Over by a Reindeer, this is probably the most widely known and most successful contemporary Christmas song, I mean, original Christmas song.
Even above Queens?
I would think so, because this has the added benefit of being performed by one of the most significant crossover groups
That's
of all time.
That's very true. All these guys.
I know that I'm and I should be sick of the song by now. And you know what? Maybe it's like a generational thing that I just have such a weakness for Run DMC. But I have heard this song 5 jillion times since it came out in 1980, whatever. I've never gotten tired of it.
I can't get tired of anything by Run DMC.
I grew up quite the metalhead, and my friend got into these when we were in high school, into Run DMC, and I couldn't do it. Then I went and saw them at the Crystal Ballroom right before Jam Master Jay died, and
right.
Fell in love with them.
Yeah.
Just kind of a whole new appreciation.
At least you got to see them with Jay.
Yes.
The thing that I will say about Run DMC is that phrase that gets so overused. People say, well, you know, they're the new Beatles, or they're our generation's Beatles. And I won't say that Run DMC was our generation's Beatles, but I would say this, that Run DMC were... For my generation, anyway, Run DMC was sort of my generation's Chuck Berry, in that they didn't have a tremendous range. Their palette was fairly limited.
But they bridged that gap.
Yeah, exactly. They did one thing, and they did it really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
They did one thing better than anybody before them, and they served to bridge a gap and to sort of break down a wall that I think had seemed sort of impassable before that. I mean, it was... There was very much a sense that rap and rock were two worlds and two cultures that couldn't ever really intersect until Run DMC. They really are,
and they paved the way for like Beastie Boys and everything too.
Yeah,
so.
Their influence is just. I mean, they didn't do it single handedly, but their influence just cannot be overstated. And I've told the story of Rockfest a couple years ago when Kid Rock played. And Run was touring with him, and Run came out about halfway through the set, and they did like this 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, you know, songs in a row of crossover stuff, including a lot of Run DMC stuff, and it was really just amazing. It was amazing to watch.
So could you say they were this generation's Beatles?
Don't do that.
I had to.
No.
Just popped in my head.
Thank you. Listener Sean's top five contemporary Christmas recordings. Dawn Taylor.
Number 2, The Waitresses, Christmas Wrapping.
Good for you. Wow, I haven't heard this for maybe 3 or 4 years.
say, this is a, like you were just saying, there's a part of me that feels like I should just be sick of the song and not like it. But I love this song. I always loved this song. I still love this song.
Bah, humbug, but that's too strong, cause it is my favorite.
It bores in your head, too.
This year's been a busy blur. Don't think I have the energy to add my already mad rush.
Okay, this is the thing I should know. Don, you probably know this. So the waitresses, so what is the deal? Are they, I mean, was it like a... Was it like some studio creation where it's just like somebody who got some studio singers to come in, or is it an actual band?
I'll tell you, that I really don't know. The waitresses were one of these bands that, like, being, you know, in LA during the period, they just sort of appeared on the radio, and I don't remember them being any part of anything, like, in the zeitgeist of the club scene or ever, like... I'm sure they must have played live shows somewhere or something, but they were just kind of like, it wasn't like the Bangles, who were all girls that like been going to the clubs and then right. put a band together, which is the same thing as the Go-Go's. The waitresses just, they might have all been studio singing. I have no idea.
I had never heard of them until Square Pegs.
Right.
The theme, that's where they entered my mind.
Wow, I haven't thought about Square Pegs in years.
I'll have to look it up. I wonder if they are some sort of kind of, you know, sort of pop runaways, you know, where there was somebody, you know, some guy, some woman who had the idea of, like, I got this great song, I'll just get some people to sing it. I wonder if anybody plays this song. This has got to get played. I mean, I would imagine this receives radio airplay. It's familiar enough, and it's one of those songs that even if you haven't heard it before, you haven't heard it for years, it instantly is familiar because it's got such a great hook to it.
Well, according to Wikipedia, they were an experimental new wave band from Akron, Ohio.
Yeah.
Which really? I guess explains why, you know,
they didn't play L.A.
I didn't see them around town, but...
go figure. I would have guessed that they were the creation of some record guy or some A&R guy or some studio head. Hey, let me just, let's get back to what's important. Do I see cookies on that?
Yes.
So let me just say this. We, in the kitchen, we've still got a few of Cheryl's cookies up, which really, I have to urge you in the strongest possible words to try it. They're fantastic. Dawn brought these thumbprint cookies. What kind of thumbprints are
they? They are jam thumbprint cookies with coconut on the outside of them.
And the only reason I've resisted is because,
milk.
Well, and if, I have no milk. And as you know, if I start to eat, I can... Sometimes I just like when you have the bugles and you're just sort of waving them right in front of me, but then I get the mush mouth thing going on. So I'm trying with all of my willpower to not open these yet.
And it should be noted that those were pulled from a dark corner that clearly is Rick's stash somewhere in the corner. That dark area over there.
They were on the table for everyone, but then they somehow moved over here to my left. And then in the back of the studio, now those are actual like Christmas sugar cookies.
Those are a mix. There's sour cream twists, some krum kaka, and some sugar cookies.
What's the second thing?
Krumkaka.
Dawn?
Not a clue.
It's a Swedish cookie.
Well, someone grab some cookies.
Okay. All right, then.
We all have head of them, Dawn, so we can't do this.
We should...
And you mean kaka, like K-A-K-E, right?
Krumkaka.
Sorry, I speak Norwegian, so...
Oh, okay.
Why don't we do this? Before we get to the number one song, we'll take just the tiniest break here. Before we unveil number one, and I will say that the Rick Emerson radio program today, somebody can be getting cookies right now.
And I will say, please feel free to grab one. And those are my very favorite.
No, screw it. I'm just going to have
those. Are my favorite for personal eating, are these particular cookies at Christmas time.
Oh, wow.
So some people have drugs that they share with their friends. You have cookies.
No. Dawn has drugs, too.
Oh, okay.
Drugs and cookies.
You just have to ask. Oh, wow. Oh, my God. So this is coconut and, did you say date?
No, that has raspberry jam. They're jam.
Kristen?
They're jam thumbprints.
I'm totally going to try one.
The other ones have apricots.
Oh, man.
So which one?
That's the sour cream twist.
Okay.
Oh, Rick Emerson likes this.
Oh, this is good.
Hi, everybody.
We've got Christmas cookies.
Rick Emerson Radio Show, it's brought to you. Sorry. No, damn it. Hold on a second.
The round ones take a whipped cream or ice cream or whatever you like in them. So.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
We're going to prove that theory later on.
There you go.
Excellent. Now, is that one of those things? Those look like ice cream cones or something.
Sort of.
What am I seeing?
Yeah,
they're kind of.
Okay. Now, is this the second thing you mentioned?
That's the croom caca.
Okay, all right. And so you might have already said this. What kind of a cookie is that? Is it just a...
It's kind of like an ice cream cone. It's got some spice in it. A little Norwegian, or a Swedish-Norwegian Scandinavian thing. My mom and I have this old tradition. Well, actually, my dad made the croom caca this year, but...
When you say a spice, is that...
Cardamom.
What is that? What kind of spice is that?
Cardamom.
I understand that, but what is it like? I'm just a baker. In other words, is it hot? Is it more like a?
It's like a seed pod. It's kind of in the cinnamon clove. Oh,
right. That's I guess
nutmeg.
That's
what reminds me of nutmeg a little bit.
Okay. Yeah. Excellent. I'll have some of that next. Anyway, as you're listening to us. I don't know, just masticate into a microphone. You can thank Sorrell's Vintages, one of our proud business partners here at the Emerson News Network. You can find them at 3713 Southeast Hawthorne. That is 3713 Southeast Hawthorne. Today, by the way, it's Kristen Bowie who's spilling food on herself. Don't think I didn't see that out of the corner of my eye.
It fell on the floor. I picked it up. I'm respectful.
Answer justified to me. Have you guys gone to Sorrell's Vintages?
I have not.
It's a fantastic place. You know where it is. You've seen it. You've walked by it. If you spend any time on Hawthorne, it is directly across the street from the Baghdad Theater, right next to Powell's Books. It is quite literally two stores in one. There's half that is all vintage furniture, which is things from the mid-century modern period, what we typically call the Mad Men or the Atomic Age era. And that is really, and no fooling, I cannot state this in any stronger terms, it is some of the most beautiful furniture you're ever going to see in your life, and it's also way less expensive than you're going to think. You look at it, and you think that this furniture is fantastic. There's no way I'm going to be able to afford it. And you look at it, and it's unbelievable how reasonably priced it is. And you're not getting repros. You're not getting duplicates. It's not like they found something really great in your grandmother's in your grandmother's Sears catalog and said, hey, this is really beautiful and very of its time, and we're going to have it cranked out by the thousands, you know, in a sweatshop and then import it. These are the real items. And what they do is they actually go all around the Northwest. They go to other stores, they go to other sales, they go to estate sales, estate closings, and they'll pick and choose the very best pieces of furniture from that era. And whether it's something large like a couch, or whether they've got the small cocktail sets or wall decorations, even little things like ashtrays that are just beautiful accent pieces. And again, this is all vintage furniture, vintage house decorations and housewares from the 50s, the 60s, up through the early 70s. For those who are playing the home game, Kristen has now spilled food on herself twice, I believe.
Not on myself, I swear. Just the floor.
Rick Emerson's not judging. On the other side of Sorrell's Vintages, you are going to find a lot of brand new things, and you know what we might call stocking stuffers or smaller items. They are brand new. They are equally great. A lot of them under 25. A lot of them under 5. And you can see some examples of these at rickemerson.com/pictures. And there's an album actually called Sorrell's Vintages. So you click on that, you're going to be able to see some of the things that Anton brought in to the studio earlier this week, or late last week. So you go to rickemerson.com/pictures. And see the photos of these things, and then go to Sorrell's Vintages itself, which is at 3713 Southeast Hawthorne. That is 3713 Southeast Hawthorne. And as Dawn said at the beginning of the show, it's a gift that works in like five different ways. A, the person who gets it is going to say, like, my God, what a great gift. I've never gotten a gift this great. Also, maybe you have style, sophistication, a subtle, intuitive grasp of what works aesthetically and what doesn't. Maybe you don't. It doesn't matter, because everything they have is beautiful. So go there and tell me you heard it here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Sorrell's Vintages, 3713 Southeast Hawthorne. That brings us to number one on listener Sean's top five list of the his most favoritist contemporary holiday recordings. Dawn Taylor, what is number one on that list?
Number one is the Ramones. Merry Christmas, I Don't Want to Fight.
Excellent. Good choice. This is a song that I haven't heard in some time.
Merry Christmas, I don't want to fight tonight with.
As soon as we heard his voice, Chris and I both got that dreamy look on our face, like,
how can you not? I mean,
I don't want to fight tonight. Merry Christmas, I don't want to fight tonight.
And yet, I believe another year has passed without an Andrew W.K. Christmas song, which seems like an inevitability. Seems like a thing he should have done 2 or 3 years ago. So, just everybody has to keep on the lookout for that.
All the children are tucked in their beds.
Look, Glockenspiel there in the background. God damn, I love the Ramones.
We instantly all got silent.
Seriously,
and just started listening.
What could we possibly add to this?
I know, right?
Christmas ain't the time for breaking each other's heart. We're
just makes you happy.
Where is Rudolph? Where is Blitzen? Merry Christmas, merry, merry, merry Christmas. All the children are talking their bits.
The thing about the Ramones that is so... is that they are, you know, they're like many bands, like Guns N' Roses are this way too, where it's four guys who have almost nothing in common, but they overlap at just the right places to make a great band. Because you listen to Joey Ramone, even if you didn't know anything about him, you can just tell he's just such a big softy. That's the thing. You know, however much he, however weird looking he is and whatever he's singing about, you know, he's just such a big, he's just such a big kid. There's just no avoiding that. Good list. Well done, sir.
Thank you.
All right. Fantastic. Well, with that, we should probably bring today's program to a conclusion. Dawn is nodding her head heartily because there are more cookies to be had in the kitchen, and we're all the way in here. Listener Sean, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And really, I never really thought I would say this, but... The Rick Pig Baby is pretty awesome, actually.
There
so
you go. That's all I needed to hear.
It really is. I mean, it's I've tried to resist.
Had to digest it, you know, a little bit to come to.
The 20 followers on Facebook, I think, just all cheered.
No, you know, I'm...
you know, there are a few phrases that are more fun to say than Rick Pig Baby.
Yeah, you know,
it's linguistically pleasing.
I'm saying you should look into trademarking that, because you can never tell when merchandising opportunities might appear.
When are you dying?
Wow. I don't know.
Knowing you, you probably have it all planned out.
I was going to say, you're leaving the studio first, though. I can tell you that. Kristen Bowie, you can hear her every weekday, 5 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. That includes today, 5 p.m. Pacific time, 5 to 5:30. Don't Panic PDX. Is it Don't Panic PDX or Portland?
PDX.
Don't Panic PDX at Cascadia.fm. That is Monday through Friday from 5 to 5:30. Don't Panic PDX at Cascadia.fm. Do you have your own website as well?
Yeah, DontPanicPDX.com.
Excellent. So you can find out more about it at Cascadia.fm or DontPanicPDX. .com. And of course, Don Taylor tomorrow, Ham-Fisted Radio. Are you returning to the program tomorrow?
I am indeed.
So that'll be tomorrow at 4.
I have no idea what we'll be chatting about, but I'm sure we'll find something to yap over.
Excellent.
Yes, 4 o'clock.
Well, thank you all for coming in today. Chris and Sean, it meant a great deal. Don't forget to join us tomorrow, by the way. We'll be talking to Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. Thursday, Anna Griffin from the Oregonian. Friday, Big Jim Willig will be here also. We'll be doing Tim Riley's Frank Sinatra Christmas and more. We want to thank our guests today, including Chris, including Sean, and my wife, who apparently is a 14-year-old girl. So, you know, Art Bell and I have... something to
talk
about.
So wait, you married a 14-year-old girl?
So I was just, you know.
You're like Jerry Lee Lewis.
Well, you know, trying to.
Is she also your cousin?
Well, I'm trying to be an authentic Mormon, Don. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill. Executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. After a brief musical interlude, today's episode of Legion of News on course, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. We will see you again tomorrow at noon for Legion of News. And afterward for the Rick Emerson Show. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from y'all. It is Tuesday, December 21st, 2010, and that is The Frequency, Kenneth. Thank you for listening. Be safe. See y'all tomorrow. Bye now.